documenting the crisis of our republic, waging war on the new world order. This is Govern America. Govern America.
From just south of the Great Lakes capital city, covering all of North America via satellite, micro-FM stations all across the country, and streaming live from FEMA Region 5 and Michigan Planning Region 2, this is Govern America. I'm Darren Weeks, your host here, along with Vicki Davis, for the next 3 hours. Nice to have you with us as we once again document the crisis of our republic, the undermining of our national, state, and individual autonomy. Today is the 23rd of December, 2017, and we're 2 days before the holiday of Christmas, and just a very short number of days before the end of 2017. Good morning, Vicki.
Good morning.
Hey, well, we're running out of year here.
I know.
What are we going to do?
Same as we did last year.
Oh, we have to do the same thing all over again?
Yeah.
I was kind of hoping we could change it up a little bit.
Well, things are moving. I mean, there is progress being made, so... You know, there's things to be grateful for this year.
Yeah, well, there's always things to be grateful for. I'll give you that. Although I would like things to progress better in the right direction. But we do. Yeah, but you're right. We do have some good news. And one of the things that, you know, the mistrial, we talked about the Bundy case last week and how things seem to be going that direction. And... today, we did have a mistrial declared, and that wasn't today. It was, what, 2 days ago?
A couple days ago, late in the afternoon. I didn't even, I heard about it accidentally. I don't know if they were just celebrating in Nevada, so they didn't do live streams, but it was odd, you know, that it took so long for the information to come out.
Well, they all couldn't believe it. Although they did have kind of some period of time to kind of prepare for the news, because it did seem like it was going that direction. I consider it a miracle. It's really a miracle. But for those that have not really been paying attention, what happened is as we talked about last week, the prosecution in the case, which is of course the government, they're so corrupt, and they were hiding government. They were hiding evidence in the trial. They weren't forthcoming with evidence. There was a lot of other things that they did that were crooked. One of the agents, wasn't it Dan Love who had the kill list?
Yes, Dan Love. He had a kill list, and then there was the.
And by kill list, let me just explain that a little better. I think he was actually proud of the fact that he was keeping a list of people that had died as a result of his own work, for lack of a better way of saying it.
And one of those people was a doctor from Utah, Dr. Red.
Yeah. But there was also a whistleblower that came forward who worked at the Bureau of Land Management, wasn't very happy with the culture of, what would you call it, childishness?
Corruption.
Huh?
Well, the culture of corruption is really...
Yeah, it's a culture of corruption, but I call it a culture of adolescence as well, because it's just ridiculous. The kinds of things that they were doing, you know, Dan Love being one of them, apparently he had a fondness for taking photographs of his own feces. Sorry to people who might be eating out there, but that's what he was doing. And he sent pictures of his girlfriend's genitalia off to the other employees there. I mean, just unbelievable things. And a lot of the comments they made about... the ranchers, and specifically the Bundys, indicated that they hated them. I mean, they were trying to do everything they could to go up against them. And you can see that last week's show notes, you can read the letter that the whistleblower, I put that in the show notes for last week. I'll try to remember to do it again this week as well. It's a 17-page letter where this whistleblower came forward to try to expose some of this stuff because he had tried numerous times to try to get the Bureau to, you know, his superiors to do something about this, to make it stop. This person was no fan of the Bundys. They did not approve of what they did in Bunkerville with calling in four people. You know, Clive and Bundy, the reason he did what he did, I think, from what I can gather, is he saw the FBI, he saw the people there, the feds, the Bureau of Land Management, he saw the federal agencies gearing up. They had surveillance on his property. They had snipers on his property. They were gearing up for what could have been another Waco-type mass murder. At least in this case, it would be his family. And when he sees this going, he calls in the people. He calls in, you know, he takes it public. Well, that's when all of the militia groups and everything came in to try to defend him, not to start any incidents, but to try to defend him against a federal onslaught. And we know the rest. And this was part of the key evidence that the feds withheld from the trial, was the fact that they had snipers on the property and that they had surveillance cameras on his property. And so,
beginning quite a long time before the actual standoff occurred, and they were doing things to provoke Cliven.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't just passive surveillance. They were doing things to provoke him. So they wanted a shootout. They wanted to kill him.
Yeah. Yeah, these guys were up and ready to go. In fact, that was some of the other evidence that was withheld, is the body camera video. They didn't want a juror to see some of the things that these agents were saying about the Mundys. So this is but in order to have a fair trial, these are things that he would have to be in possession of. So a lot of the stuff they denied even existed, but it came out anyway that it existed because of, I think, a witness alluded to it or something, and there may have been some other things that I'm not privy to. But that was the reason why the judge in the case, Gloria Navarro, closed down the courtroom, held some private discussions with the both prosecution and the defense, and ultimately ended up declaring a mistrial. It was the government's own corruption that caused this.
Criminal activity.
Mm-hmm.
Actual criminal activity that the government was engaged in, and the prosecutor knew it, and he tried to keep it out of the trial,
right,
which is prosecutorial misconduct. At a minimum, you know, if not criminal in and of itself, as an accessory to the crimes of the government. I consider it to be an accessory.
Yeah.
After the fact.
Yeah, so it's really good news. No, they're not completely out of the woods yet, because there's some question as to whether or not they're going to go further with the, you know, try again to prosecute them. Now, this would be the second time for this particular incident. Of course, we know about the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge thing. That was something that took place, but and so they ended up having a hung jury in that case. So now they held them over for trial instead of letting them go after that. And we know the story about, you know, Marcus Mumford being assaulted in the courtroom when he objected about it. So this has been an ongoing saga, an ongoing drama. But I guess they're supposed to decide sometime in January. I want to say the 20-something. I don't have the exact date here. But they're supposed to, I think it's going to be her, the judge, Gloria Navarro, that's going to be deciding ultimately if they're going to try to proceed with another trial or not. I don't see how they can have a fair trial at this point, you know, but...
With the list of actual criminal activity that the government employees were engaged in, I don't think that she will dare have another trial, because their whole objective, the prosecutor's whole objective, was to keep the information about corruption of government out of the trial. And if they go forward with another trial, it will all come out this time, because it's all known. It's been made public. And so what they will be doing is amplifying the message of corruption of government if they do go forward with another trial.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if that's enough to dissuade them. I hope it is.
It's known that the government was the aggressor, not the Bundys.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I can't see them actually going forward with another trial, because with what's known to this point, even more will come out, I'm sure.
Well, I'm wondering how they're going to get a jury that's impartial or not biased at this point, because... Now, granted, I'm sure the media isn't jumping all over this story like they have others in the past, anything that makes them look bad. I honestly haven't been listening to a whole lot to national media, but I have a pretty good idea that they're a pretty good feeling that they're not covering this very much.
I have a friend in Salt Lake who sent an email about an article that was in the paper in Salt Lake, and that article did not cover the crimes of the government.
What a surprise.
The six Brady, I think they call them Brady violations.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess Brady was a case that set precedents in the criminal justice system. And there were at least six Brady violations that the prosecutor engaged in. Not even mentioning the criminal behavior of the BLM and FBI.
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah.
Well, the Oregonian, which is certainly no friend to the ranchers and the Bundys, started off an article with, pointing out at least the crimes, some of them anyway. It says a federal judge Wednesday declared a mistrial in the prosecution of Nevada cattleman Clive and Bundy, his two sons, and a co-defendant, citing the government's willful failure to turn over multiple documents that could help the defense fight conspiracy and assault charges in the 2014 Bunkerville standoff. The court, and this is a quote, "The court does regrettably believe a mistrial in this case is the most suitable and only remedy," unquote. That was Gloria Navarro. She issuing her, and they call it a ruling, from the bench before a packed courtroom. The judge listed six types of evidence that she said prosecutors deliberately withheld before trial, including information about the presence of an FBI surveillance camera, we told you about that, on a hill overlooking the Bundy Ranch, and documents about U.S. Bureau of Land Management snipers outside the ranch. The others were maps, an FBI log with entries about snipers on standby, threat assessments that indicated the Bundys weren't violent, and the Bureau of Land Management was trying to provoke a conflict by antagonizing them, as you mentioned, Vicki, and nearly 500 pages of internal affairs documents involving Land Bureau Special Agent Dan Love, who has since been fired from the agency. Now, I'll note that I don't think he was fired for anything having to do with his connection with this. There was some kind of a scandal regarding the Burning Man event. I don't remember the details now, but he was doing some shady things with regard to that, I believe is what part of it was, at least. But anyway, the material the judge found, but there's a lot of evidence regarding Dan Love that they were protecting him. And this is really goes to the heart of this whole whistleblower thing, because the whistleblower as I said, he tried to come out and get them to do something, his superiors, he found that the superiors were a part of this whole culture of corruption in adolescence. I think they even had, I read somewhere that they even had a poster of Clive and the Bundys on the wall, you know, mocking them in the office. I mean, these people are scumbags. Yeah. They're just scumbags.
That kind of stuff doesn't bother me. It's the actual criminal.
Well, it bothers me because I'll tell you what, they're not there to do this. They're not there to they're there to be a professional agency of the federal government. We fund these agencies. We fund them. They're funded by the people. And the problem is you got so many of these bureaucratic agencies that are completely shielded from the public now. I mean, we're forced to support them through our tax dollars at the barrel of a gun. And they have such contempt for the people that they're supposed to be serving. That's why I kind of laugh anymore when somebody says, I served in the government in this role, or I served for so many years in that role. Yeah, you served yourself. You served the man. You certainly didn't serve the people, because none of these federal bureaucratic agencies, and I'm sorry, increasingly law enforcement, quote unquote, increasingly they don't serve the people.
No, they don't.
When you're bashing people's heads in.
About that. Yeah, you're right about that. But what I mean when I say that is that that's petty misconduct. It's the actual criminal behavior. The BLM had an objective, and it's obvious through this whole trial. The objective was to take Clive and Bundy's land away from him.
Yes.
By putting him out of business, taking away his ability to feed his cattle, harassment, actual criminal behavior, using the power of the government against its own citizen.
Yeah.
That's what is really important as far as I'm concerned, is that they were trying to basically use the power of government to steal Clive and Bundy's property up to the point of killing them if necessary.
Yeah.
And from the sounds of the description of Dan Love, it sounds like that he was a psychopath who would have enjoyed killing the Bundys.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. And what's disturbing is that the other side, his management, the people who have high-ranking positions there, would protect somebody like that.
Yes, and give them the resources and support to do it.
Yeah.
That's the danger. That's the real danger, is that when you have a criminal, a government that is a criminal racketeering operation, everybody is at risk. Everybody.
Yeah, so they talk.
Because they are supposed to defend us, and they have become our abusers.
This Oregonian piece says the material the judge found would bolster the defense stance, and then we're talking about the material that the feds withheld, would bolster the defense stance that defendant Ryan Payne put out a call for support because the Bundys feared that they were surrounded by snipers and felt isolated in early April 2014 before the standoff with federal rangers and officers on April 12, 2014. The federal officers were carrying out a court-ordered roundup of Bundy cattle for failure to pay grazing fees and fines for two decades. Well, there's a backstory there that they don't bother to mention, of course, and that is he quit. What was the reason why he quit paying the fines?
Because he knew that they were trying to put him out of business, and because the land, he had rights that preceded the creation of the BLM.
Yeah, he has water rights, which precedes the creation.
Right, and the land is Nevada land, not federal. Well, as far as Cliven is concerned,
it's, and as far as the Constitution Nevada is concerned, but hey, you know, let's not bring the Constitution in.
Yeah, he was willing to pay the money to Nevada, to Clark County, but they wouldn't take it. They took the first check from him, you know, for his grazing fees, but after that they wouldn't take it anymore. So so it has to do with state sovereignty issues.
Yeah.
You know, most of the land in the West is owned by the federal government, or at least it's managed. They don't own it. They manage it. But so the states really have very little of the territory in the West.
Yeah.
And so that's been a big issue in the West with the government environmental activities, you know, closing roads, shutting down economic activity that was traditional in the West, which includes logging and mining and ranching and farming and, you know, what we have are people from Washington, D.C., setting policies that affect the lives and livelihoods of people in the West.
And none of these people have ever gotten dirt under their fingernails.
No, and not only that, but they're working for foreign governments. They are working for foreign corporations. They actually lobby Congress, you know, like the Indian caucus and the different caucuses in Congress where they... and PACs that lobby for legislation that benefit foreign countries.
Yeah, and Harry Reid is up to his eyeballs in that, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
That's my opinion.
Yeah, with the Chinese.
Yeah, exactly, as so many others are. Hey, by the way, did you hear that he wanted a program for the UFOs funded? Did you hear that? He was into that. The Pentagon revealed something about a secret government program to investigate UFOs, and Harry Reid was really pushing that.
Oh, man.
Yeah, he's a little out there. So that's for Harry Reid. Anyway, we've got a call on the line. Wait, what'd you say?
I was going to say there are a lot of people that, you know, really are into that whole UFO thing.
Oh, I know.
I've always told
Harry Reid
that I'll believe in them when I see one face to face.
Well, I'll tell you, we don't really need beings coming here from flying saucers. We've got enough of people from another world in our federal government. They certainly aren't people as I think of people. Anyway, hello, caller. You're on the air.
Hello, Darren. Hello, Vicky.
Hey.
This is Harvey in Florida.
How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm listening to your wonderful program. It's you bring such valuable information to your audience. It's terrific.
Thank you.
So I catch up on every disgusting thing that's going on with the American government.
It's a weekly dose of reality, Harvey.
Oh, yeah. It's a shocker, all right. Vicky brought up the American government, what they did to the Bundys, how they used the power of the government to try to take their land and destroy their lives and maybe even kill them. Well, this is what we do on a daily basis around the world. The FBI has been nothing but a cover-up operation since the days of the murder of John F. Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, and probably long before that. They should have been disbanded after 9/11, 2001. It's unconscionable with all their technology and all their stuff, and they had their own people reporting what was about to happen in New York City when those towers came down, and they ignored it intentionally to let it happen because of the Cheney Bush cabal and all those criminals. So they should have been disbanded that instant. The instant those buildings went down. The fact that none of them have ever been brought to justice. And, you know, I had one time infiltrated that organization. It was probably about 16, 17 years ago. I happened to be in a building in Maryland, in a Marriott hotel, and they were having a retirement conference. And it was an FBI retirement giant affair that they were having there. And I got up early in the morning and went down the elevator. I ended up probably on the wrong floor or maybe the right floor, but I walked right into the middle of their retirement center. It was about 6 o'clock in the morning. They had just set up the buffet for breakfast, and I helped myself, of course, because there was nobody there. And I saw the stacks and stacks of books about all. It was very good. It was a nice breakfast.
I'm sure.
And I just wandered around. I saw stacks of books on all these tables and all these desks with all the benefits that these criminals, I mean professional criminals, mass murderers, really. So this is an organization that's, that, you know, they have to watch their pension. It's all about their pension. They'll do anything for the sake of a dollar, you know.
Hey, Harvey.
Their own mother.
You want to hold on for a minute? I got to take the bottom of the hour break here.
I'd love to hold on.
Okay, hang on just a second. Hey, all right, we got to take the break. We'll be back in a moment. This is Govern America, Darren Weeks, Vicki Davis, and Harvey in Florida is hanging on the line there. And the website is governamerica.com. Vicki's website is channelingreality.com and thetechnocratictyranny.com. And we'll take the quick, brief timeout here at the bottom of the hour, and we'll be back in a moment. This is Govern America.
If you have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll-free. 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
America News this hour, I'm Darren Weeks. Scientists are expanding the genetic code of life using man-made DNA to create semi-synthetic strains of bacteria. The Associated Press reports on new research that shows altered microbes that work to produce proteins unlike those found in nature. Researchers say it's a step toward designer drug development. All life is made up of 4 DNA building blocks known by the letters A, T, C, and G, but the team at the Scripps Research Institute in California expanded the genetic alphabet, creating 2 artificial DNA letters called X and Y. Researchers brewed up a type of E. coli bacteria commonly used for lab research that contained both natural DNA and this new artificial base pair, storing extra genetic information inside cells. Researchers claim that their goal is designing organisms that work differently from the way nature intended, so scientists can harness them to create designer drugs, biofuels, or a range of other products. There's no reporting about the possible military applications of the technology, however. China is increasing its focus on STEM education, science, technology, education, and math. The country has released its official blueprint for a smart Hong Kong, a plan for the efficient and sustainable cities, embracing digital data, innovation, and technology. According to the Sweden-based Easy Park Group, Hong Kong currently ranks 68th in the world when analyzing the city's smart credentials, including transport, sustainability, and living standards. The South China Morning Post describes successful smart cities as those that require tech-savvy workforce, highly skilled in science and technology. They are what a government study on the smart city blueprint in Hong Kong calls smart people. China's blueprint outlines specific policy objectives, including the facilitation of lifelong learning for individuals in the public and private sector, youth to elderly, with a strong focus on STEM. That's the news this hour. I'm Darren Weeks.
One of the most popular movies during the Christmas season is the old favorite, It's a Wonderful Life. It's the story of George Bailey, a compassionate but dejected businessman who is ready to give up on life when his guardian angel, Clarence, intervenes. Clarence shows him life as if George had never been born, and George discovers that for all his supposed mistakes and failures, he has brought joy and life to countless people. It really is a wonderful life, and not just on TV. Each and every person has so much potential for good, and nowhere is this potential greater than with an unborn child. This Christmas, and always, please work to preserve the wonder of life for the unborn and their mothers. This has been a perspective on life from National Right to Life. For more information, visit our website at nrlc.org. That's nrlc.org.
Welcome back to the broadcast. This is Govern America. GovernAmerica.com is the website. Once again, GovernAmerica.com. You can get a lot of the latest news and information there. You can get all of the past broadcasts here on the show. There you can subscribe to the podcast of the show and get to the show notes and various other things. So check out the website, GovernAmerica.com, and also Vicki Davis's ChannelingReality.com. And thetechnocratictyranny.com. We're talking about the situation today with the mistrial declared on the Bundy Ranch. And I have Harvey in Florida on the line. Vicki Davis, of course, is here as well. And I don't know where... Did I interrupt you, Harvey?
No, I just wanted to continue with the crimes of the FBI that I could...
Yeah, you were talking about how you had infiltrated this meeting. When you...
Oh, it was unbelievable. It's all about their benefits.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they get tremendous retirement benefits after 25 years or 20 years of being loyal Gestapo. And there's absolutely no need for the FBI. You just look back in their history. You know, they were... in 1993, they actually supplied the bomb material for the first attempt on the World Trade Center with a truck bomb that they drove into the basement,
mm-hmm.
and they supplied the actual bomb itself that tried to bring down the trade tower and caused a few deaths, and it unfortunately didn't bring it down. They had to try again. So we know about that one. Can imagine all the crimes we don't know about. I'm glad that this whistleblower came forward and provided the information, the secret information that wasn't supposed to go to the trial, and that would have proven that it was a conspiracy to deny them their civil rights. But let's go to Waco, Texas, which is probably one of the most horrendous episodes. It was run by the FBI and the BATF, or whatever it is, the Bureau of Tobacco and Firearms.
Yeah, alcohol,
and that operation.
Alcohol, tobacco, and firearms.
They slaughtered. They called in the military, and they actually brought in tanks, incendiary bombs, and burnt women and children to death here in America. And I warned many times, what you see them doing to these people overseas, it's only a matter of time till they do it here.
Yeah.
You just go to the history. How do they exist? I mean, this guy Trump is as phony as any son of a gun that ever showed up as a president. He's surrounded with generals. He hasn't disbanded one thing, and he's invaded so many countries. I don't know how many people. They should have a scorecard in Washington, but how many people they killed today and how many people they killed yesterday with their drones and their missiles and their firearms and supplying weapons all around the world and training. These training people, I don't even want to call them people, these people that train people overseas to kill their own people better. We train them here. They used to have the School of the Americas. It's a culture of death.
Yes.
The culture of death. America is the culture of death. From slaughtering our own children, our babies in the womb. It's unbelievable. You couldn't make this up. This is as close to hell on earth.
Well, we're headed toward a situation where I'm afraid we're heading to a major hot war with Russia. Right now, The Trump administration has just agreed, I don't know if you heard or not, but they're going to sell some hard weaponry to Ukraine. And so there's going to evidently be a buildup there. Originally, they weren't going to sell the more heavier stuff, you know, to Ukraine. And apparently they just announced that they've changed their mind on that, and they're going to go ahead and go forward with it. So we're going to see a buildup of U.S. weaponry in Ukraine, apparently. And for what purpose? To fend off an attack with the Russians? To provoke the Russians to do something? In true style, this is really the objective that the modus operandi that they use, it seems, everywhere where they want to start a war. You had that with Japan. You know, them goading into attacking Pearl Harbor. They say history repeats itself.
All in the name of human rights. Mm-hmm. But it isn't Russia that's the problem, it's China. And I do believe that our government has been infiltrated.
I want to make it clear, because I don't say it enough, I'm not a fan of Russia or Putin. I tell you, I'm a fan of the Russian people. I'm a fan of people, ordinary people everywhere. Because it seems like no matter what the country or what the government, the people are the ones that always get the raw deal. But I'm not a Putin defender in any way. I know if you lived over there, you'd have plenty of corruption over there as well. I'm sure Putin is corrupt to his, you know, over his head. So I'm not suggesting otherwise. And I'm certainly not carrying anybody's water. I really don't care if anybody thinks I am. But I'm not. But I do see the double standard, and I can see the pattern of abuse over and over again when our government tries to start conflict. I mean, they want these wars because it enriches the military-industrial complex and it accomplishes political means for the New World Order.
Well, they have a strategic plan to control the whole world, and I do. It may or may not be in partnership with China. I'm not sure if China is the globalist selected country to rule the world, because they have such a rule the world through technology mm-hmm. and systems, because they have so many people. And because those people speak a language that not many people outside their culture speak.
What I'm trying to figure out is, it seems to me like I remember that China was one of the PNAC countries. Wasn't it? Do you recall? I believe it was one of the countries that were, I'm pretty sure it was mentioned in that PNAC report for a regime change. Now, I don't see how they're going to be able to accomplish that without a significant disruption of both our economy and theirs, because they're interlinked now, because these globalists have made it that way.
Well, that's really the objective of the whole global economic system, is to create an interwoven system of dependency.
Exactly.
And so, I don't carry water for anybody except the American people and the American system. But I do see the duplicity in what government says is their policy and what they're doing,
mm-hmm.
and what in the real world what is happening. And
right.
So I don't see Russia as the aggressor in this. Now, the Ukraine is a country, I don't think we have any business over there. It's not our country, it's not our business.
No, I agree. No. I wish, but you could say the same for just about every other place we are. Hey, Harvey, did you have anything else?
Oh, yeah. You know, what you said, Darren, is so important. You said that it's always the people. It's the everyday people that get slaughtered. I mean, how many, maybe millions in Iraq, millions in Afghanistan. Now it's applying the weapons to, to, to fight the Yemenis. Maybe, they're dying like flies over there because of malnutrition and everything else going on and the bombs that we supply to Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, and let's
exactly
talk
about... right, Harvey.
And we can mention
that
Yemen, too.
Exactly right. The economic sanctions... are you there? I heard a click.
Oh, I'm here.
Okay.
Okay. The economic sanctions that they put on hurt the average people in a country. Doesn't hurt the bureaucrats one iota. So you're right.
That's what we're doing in North Korea now. We're doing exactly the same as we did to Japan before World War II. We're trying to cut off every single thing that the people need to survive. In Iraq, we cut off their medicines. Remember when Madeleine Albright said, so what if 500,000 children died because of the lack of medicine? It was worth it to her. Yeah. You see, these are the scumbags that took over our country and are trying to rule the world. People like Madeleine Albright, Hillary Clinton. It just goes on and on and on. And Donald Trump hasn't said one word. Not one word to turn this around. Because he knows the only thing we make is death, weapons of death. That's America's product. When you look at our gross national product, it's all about weapons and missiles and drones and killing machines and training people to kill.
That's well, the billions and billions and billions of dollars that the United States government has spent on the military. I believe we spend more on our military than any other nation, all of the other nations of the world combined. And what do we get for it?
Right, because we're the enforcers. We're the enforcers. We're the enforcers.
I believe so.
The New World Order.
Yeah, we're
that's right.
The muscle men. We muscle people.
It's up to us to discuss it and to bring it up on the airwaves and try to spread the word so we can face it. We can't do anything about it till we're honest and true and face what we've created. And I thank you so much for keeping your airwaves open. I'll let somebody else call. Thank you, Darren. Thank you, Vicky.
Thanks, Harvey. God bless you, sir. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye. There's Harvey in Florida. And folks, you're welcome to call in as well. Toll-free 844-646-8376. That's toll-free 844-6-GOVERN. 844-646-8376. Haven't really taken a lot of calls in the past several weeks, I think, probably the past month, because we just haven't had a whole lot of time, being that we're coming close to the end of the year and coming close to the Christmas holiday. We could open it up a little bit today and go ahead and talk to people. I always like to hear from the listeners, but it's just there's just never a never-ending assault in this situation. With the wars that are endless and never ending, the machinations of tyranny, really, that have been created around the world by our State Department, especially, is something that I find very, very alarming and disturbing.
They're part of the global system. The whole State Department is, as far as I'm concerned, it's a diseased organ.
Mm-hmm.
Because they are part of the global system. And the United States being the enforcers, that's exactly right. In the International Division of Labor, it seems that they've selected the United States to be the enforcers. And what our soldiers are doing over in the Middle East, we first destroy the country and then rebuild it, and they're training paramilitary police, you know, for a global force of paramilitary police to keep everybody in line.
Right.
Plus, you know, they're helping China to build the one belt, one road system.
Yep.
Of global transportation.
Mm-hmm.
For commerce. The design is for all countries to export their production and import their consumption so that the international banking system can not only keep track, but, implement the global tax. It's all planned out at the global level. So
yeah.
At our domestic level in the United States, the government is doing things that make no sense in terms of what's in the best interest of our country, and it's because the government has been turned outward towards global, towards a global system.
Exactly. I want to say one more thing with regard to this rancher situation, and then we'll get off of it and on to other things. But the New American, Alex Newman, writes, outraged by new whistleblower revelations of horrifying wrongdoing by federal officials in the Bundy case. One official kept a kill list, others withheld evidence from the defense. Prominent lawmakers in Western states are asking Congress and the Trump administration to investigate. The government's case, which gained national attention after a 2014 armed standoff in Nevada between Bureau of Land Management and Bundy family support and its supporters, appears to be crumbling. But even as it appears increasingly likely that the defendants will soon walk, and in fact they have, at least for now, officials say that the alleged crimes perpetrated by government officials must not be allowed to go unpunished. As the New American reported on December 19th, a memo by whistleblower Larry Clint Wooten is his name, who served as the BLM, I don't know why this hybrid's doing this, I'm going to have to really work on this week. Larry Clint Wooten, who served as the lead BLM investigator on the case, revealed an incredible array of misconduct by heavily armed bureaucrats among the most alarming revelations. Special Agent in Charge Dan Love, as we mentioned, already under investigation by Congress, kept a kill list as a trophy commemorating ranchers whose deaths he contributed to. Now think of that, folks. What kind of a person would do something like that? A monster. A monster. And that's exactly what these people are monsters. Apparently, the bureaucrat was proud of his role in driving three Utah ranchers to commit suicide. The whistleblower memo also exposed Love's extremely bizarre habits, including, as we already mentioned, photographing his own excrement and his girlfriend's genitalia and sending the images to colleagues. Other BLM officials involved in the Bundy case bragged about brutalizing protesters, according to the whistleblower. There were also numerous accusations of legal and policy violations that, in addition to putting the prosecution at risk, also could subject the individuals involved to potential prosecution. For instance, agents celebrated their heavy-handed attacks, shoving somebody's face to the ground so hard that gravel stuck into the skin, and more. And they were bragging about this. Throughout the explosive memo, aside from the unethical conduct of and bigotry against Mormons expressed by officials, there's also evidence that some BLM officials wanted to investigate a conflict and even kill some of the defendants and their supporters. On top of that, there are several allegations that officials withheld exculpatory evidence from the defense. But now, with the facts coming out, prominent officials from the region want answers. Washington Representative Matt Shea, who was elected as the House Republican Caucus Chairman this year, explained that the BLM controls almost 500,000 acres of land in his state. He said, when an agency has these sorts of dramatic allegations against it, obviously I'm very concerned. Mr. Wooten was a lead investigator. This isn't some low-level disgruntled employee. What he alleges here is essentially unethical, illegal behavior. He also alludes to the fact that government was aggressor, not Bundy, and there was even a kill book kept by Special Agent in Charge Love that bragged about driving these people to commit suicide. Especially concerning was the confirmation that snipers were employed, contradicting government claims, denying or downplaying their presence. It goes on from there. We talked about a lot of this, so I'm going to let this go. But the point is that this is your criminal government, folks. We're dealing with a bunch of federal mafia agents here. And the beat goes on. And I don't have a whole lot of confidence in a congressional investigation. I think I told you last night, Vicky, when the indictments start being handed out, then I'll get excited. Unfortunately, this is where we are today. A lot of these congressional investigations, I'm all for it, don't get me wrong. I think it's great that they're talking about looking into it. But it needs to be more than just a dog and pony show, as most of these federal investigations are. I want people to be prosecuted, and I'm not talking about the Bundys. I'm talking about these scumbag criminal agents that are doing all they can to brutalize property owners.
And steal their property.
Steal their property.
At the point where they say, we are not looking to prosecute people. We are just looking to correct the system, just like they did with 9/11. They were not looking for the perpetrators. They were looking to fix the system. That's the point where you say this has been a sham, and it's a dialectic for a political purpose, and game over. Nothing will be done to change anything.
Right, exactly. All right, moving along. I think we talked that subject almost to death, although it's a very worthy subject. We'll have to watch and see how it plays out. Hopefully, this will find out in January that this is the end of that. But we've talked a lot about how the FBI, on the same theme here, how many of these terrorist attacks in our country and around the world are set up. A third of the Federal Bureau of Investigation's money is designated for anti-terror activity by the Bureau. If there is no terrorist activity, guess what happens to that funding? Hey, it's not needed anymore. So they got to make sure that they have terrorist attacks. And we've talked about how these agents take mentally retarded people by the hand, and they will literally bring them right to the point where they are ready to pull the trigger, whatever trigger that might happen to be it dialing a phone to set off an explosive or whatever the case, and then they take them down. And then the next thing you know, they're having a press conference. Look what we did. We stopped terrorism. Congratulations.
Yeah, we saved you.
Yeah, we saved you. The savior has arrived. And anyway, we had another situation. So anytime we see these so-called terrorist attacks, which were almost unheard of, I think, before September 11th, I mean, we might have had an occasional thing here or there, but we didn't have anything like what we have today. Since the war on terror, ladies and gentlemen, what did we get? A lot more terrorism than we ever had before. It's like everything else the government declares war on. And here we have another situation just the other day. Let's see. This was December 22nd, so yesterday.
We're getting our first look at the man accused of plotting a terror attack on Pier 39 in San Francisco during Christmas week. Here's a look at 26-year-old Everett Aaron Jameson. He is due in court this afternoon. Jameson is a tow truck driver who lives in Modesto. He's charged with attempting to supply support to a foreign terrorist organization, specifically the Islamic State. He was discharged from the Marines, where he had received sniper training. According to court documents, Jameson chose Pier 39 because he knew it would be crowded. The documents cite an FBI informant who says he had Facebook posts about terror attacks, including the one in New York City that left 8 people dead.
Why is it that all these terrorists seem to have connections with the military?
Funny thing about that, isn't it?
Yeah, it doesn't prove. I mean, the guy may have just been in the military. I'm not saying that for sure that this is a set-up situation. But I just think it's interesting that they either have ties to the intelligence agencies or ties to military. And that's frequently the case with these characters. Anyway, yep. Take it for whatever it's worth. Then we had a situation also the other day. I don't know if you followed this at all. There was a train derailment. Now, what this looks like is it looks like the train was actually going too fast. Let me just go ahead and play a backgrounder here.
Mary, obviously, we're waiting, and you've been in the position in the government when one of these things happened, and you're waiting to get information. We have to be careful as we get information. But when you look at these pictures right here,
This is in Washington State, by the way.
If you can see them. I'm not sure if you can, given the Skype hookup right here. But when you see the train dangling over the track like this, when you hear the little bit we know so far, this Cascades train going south, what are your biggest questions, or what can you conclude looking at this at the moment?
Well, I suppose the first thing that will come to everyone's mind, and I'm sure the NTSB investigators' minds, is this was the first day. According to the Amtrak schedule on their website, this was the first day of this new high-speed service. This was a new train, a new run. It's highlighted on their website that it could make the journey faster. And to have this happen on its maiden voyage will be of huge interest to the NTSB. They'll be looking at whether the tracks were sufficient for, I believe the train was going 81 miles an hour. That's a pretty high speed. It's not Japan bullet train speed, but that's fairly high speed. There's a report that there was a vehicle on the track, and you can't see that on an overpass. That wouldn't seem to make sense since it was on an overpass, but we don't know how much further ahead from these pictures the vehicle could have been. And then they'll also be looking at, since Amtrak apparently does not own the track, was the track up for this high-speed service? Does it have, probably not, positive train control? So there's just so many questions for the NTSB to start, and I'm sure they're digging in already. I'll bet the team's already there.
I thought the interesting thing about that being a car on the track, or somebody said that there was an object on the track. I don't know where these reports, where these rumors, if they are rumors, come from. But according to what I'm reading, it appears, at least early on, it looks like the investigators are saying that the train actually was going way too fast, and that they said that there's no indication that the engineer had applied the brake. But it's worthy of noting, and this is the only reason why I bring this up. I'll tell you what, let's go ahead and take the break real quick, because we're already at the top of the hour again, and I'll briefly touch upon this on the other side of the break, and we'll move on to other things. Folks, this is Discover America. Vicki Davis is here. I'm Darren Weeks. Time's going by very quickly. You can join us in the chat room. There's a few people in there. Chat.governamerica.com. Chat.governamerica.com. And we'll be back. Hour number two is straight ahead.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Studies have shown that the farm soil we get our vegetables from is dead, meaning it is depleted of minerals. Sulfur is a mineral. Sulfur has been depleted from the soil, which means most people have been depleted of sulfur. Sulfur has been found to transport oxygen throughout the body. You need oxygen. You need organic sulfur. American Voice Radio Network has organic sulfur. Go to AmericanVoiceRadio.com and then to the Superstore to order your organic sulfur. It's your choice. Do you want to feel better or not? Don't forget to tune in to the Sulfur Hour Plus One on AmericanVoiceRadio.com Thursdays, 6 p.m. Pacific.
Crisis of our republic, waging war on the new world order. This is Govern America. Govern America.
We're just south of the Great Lakes capital city, covering all of North America via satellite, micro FM stations all across the country, and streaming live from FEMA Region 5. and Michigan Planning Region 2. This is the second hour of Government America. Darren Weeks, Vicki Davis here with you. As we are every Saturday, it continues to be the 23rd of December, 2017, as we get right back into the show, talking about this train derailment that happened earlier in the week and some of the questionable things about it. It's looking more and more like this could very well just be that the engineer was going too fast. It's entirely likely. The reason why I bring this up, and I think it's important to keep in mind, we were just talking about terrorism and false flag operations and this sort of thing. And I'm not even saying this is a false flag operation, because more than likely it's not. But we do have to keep in mind that some of the things that have happened in recent weeks makes you wonder what was really going on here. ABC News. Well, before I get to that, let me get to this. There was there's a group called It's Going Down. This is a Antifa affiliate, and some kind of Antifa organization, I guess. I'm trying to remember exactly what the terminology was used, but they put on their website, It's Going Down, Olympia, Washington. Train tracks sabotage to stop fracking equipment. Now, this was on April 20th of this year, where they brag about sabotaging train tracks. Early in the morning, and this is their words on their own website, early in the morning, and by the way, the post has now been removed. Early in the morning of April 20th, they say, we poured concrete on the train tracks that lead out of the port of Olympia to block any trains from using the tracks. We took precautions to notify BNSF, the train company. We called them, and we used wires to send a signal that the tracks were blocked. We did this not to avoid damaging the train. Nothing would bring bigger grins to our faces, but to avoid the risk of injuring railway workers. This action was done to disrupt the movement of trains carrying propants used in natural gas fracturing. These train tracks are part of a system of pipelines, fracking wells, mines, clear cuts, control centers, fiber optics, dams, highways, and factories that cover the planet and are physical manifestations of a process that is destroying the ecosystems, cultures, and inhabitants everywhere. Behind this network of infrastructure, there are politicians, CEOs, and bureaucrats who have private security, cops, prison guards, and nonprofit directors, PR consultants, and the legacy of 500 years of colonization to back them up. We oppose all of these manifestations, infrastructural, personal, and ideological. We block the train tracks because we want to blockade the entire web of domination that is slowly killing us. We were inspired to take this action by acts of resistance taking place across Turtle Island and the world, particularly the fierce indigenous resistance of water protectors against the Dakota Access Pipeline, the encampment blocking a train full of fracking material on these same tracks in Olympia this past November, and the clandestine attacks against pipelines in Florida, South Dakota, and Iowa. We also were emboldened by the spirit of all those who have risen against the white supremacist police in Ferguson, Baltimore, Oakland, and elsewhere, as well as by the riotous opposition that has characterized the first few months of Donald Trump's reign. Resistance to this mini tendriled death machine has and must take many forms. Some have set their goals narrow and try to stop the point of from shipping propants. We are aiming beyond for a liberation that destroys all vestiges of opposition and colonization, leaving us free to experiment with ways of living in cooperation on our own terms. We want to unlearn the legacies of domination that we have inherited. We need a diverse and vibrant resistance composed of more forms of destruction. More forms of destruction, listeners. Mutual aid and solidarity than we can yet imagine. This action and actions like it are quite easy to do yourself. This only took a few hours and a little bit of planning. Yeah. See, it's so easy to sabotage tracks, listeners. It's so easy to commit acts of terrorism. That's what we're talking about here. Yeah, we're talking about acts of terrorism here. The hardest part was calming our nerves, they said. Particularly easy was placing wire on the tracks to send a signal to the train company that the tracks were blocked. This action can and has been easily repeated wherever train tracks are. For more information on how to do this, they actually link to a video. Now, I guess they were raided. And after that was posted, but it was left up on the internet according to what I've read, it was pulled down the day of this derailment. Whether that's true or not, I can't say because I was unaware that post existed prior to this derailment. But they ABC News reported back in May, on May 8th, FBI warns of train derailment threat. Devices that could be used by terrorists to derail trains are being stolen from rail facilities around the country, the FBI warned today. 9 derailers, a piece of railroad equipment used to derail train cars for safety purposes in rail yards, have been stolen recently, sources said, citing the FBI's weekly intelligence bulletin. I'll leave it there. The link will be in the show notes. But I'm bringing this up not to say that this latest incident was anything other than what is being presented. I'm not suggesting that. I'm just pointing out the fact that we do have to keep in mind there has been a history here in recent weeks and recent months of terrorists, and yes, domestic terrorists, trying to use this tactic to get their ends, to get their means. Gateway Pundit reported, let's see, the headline is, flashback. Antifa terrorists sabotage train in Olympia 3 weeks ago. Today, train wreck kills 6. So that was just this week that they came out with at the day of the event. They said that in late November, far-left Antifa terrorists sabotaged a train in Olympia, Washington. They were against fracking. So, and we just read the post. So this is something I just thought was worthy of pointing out, taking a little time, because we're dealing with communists all over our little country here, folks. Little communists running around everywhere. And
right. And what they're... Now, in that manifesto, they mentioned Turtle Island. Isn't Turtle Island the place where the banksters met when they created the Federal Reserve?
No, that was Jekyll Island.
Jekyll Island. Okay, well, Turtle Island, okay. There is a Turtle Island in Australia.
Okay.
That is just an awesome place. But these people, they call themselves environmentalists, but the global communism, in trying to come up with a common interest, a global common interest, arrived at using the environment as a common purpose for people. So these people definitely are communists.
Well, even the report from Iron Mountain, if you recall, on the possibility and desirability of peace, which is supposed to be nothing more than a satire, although it's funny how the satire has come to pass, they talk about the environment being used as a tool, boogeyman. They needed boogeyman. They needed, something to galvanize the people together. War is very effective, and the whole idea of the report is to figure out some substitute for war. And the environment would
It does. It does wage a war on people because when the EPA was created, they changed the mission of our government from being a protector of and defender of the people to being a protector of the earth.
Right.
The earth and the waters. And so, when you follow that when you change the philosophy like that, people actually become the enemies of the earth.
Yeah.
Because we live here. You know, we are creatures of the environment. And so, and they see people as fouling the environment.
Yeah. It all goes into this whole earth worship and nature thing.
A new religion of
Gaia.
Worship of Gaia.
Yeah, exactly. Tell you what, we got a call on the line, John in Tennessee, I believe it is. And folks, you're welcome to call in if you want. 844-646-8376. Toll free, 844-6-GOVERN. That's 844-646-8376. Hello, you're on the air.
Good morning. Good morning, Vicki.
Good morning.
You answered your question. You answered your question. Turtle Island is the planet. That's what Turtle Island is to these people. So when they talk about preserving Turtle Island, it's saving the earth. That's not why I called, but that's what they mean.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the reason I called is not only do we have, this offshoot of Antifa, they've proven a couple things to me. First of all, they're educated, they're articulate, and they're idiots. So they're very articulate, ignorant, educated idiots.
I don't think they're idiots at all, John. I think they're revolutionaries.
Well, but what I'm saying is for ultra-liberal, Turtle Island-protecting people,
mm-hmm.
they're not the brightest bulbs in the box. They are very smart, okay? The reason that I called was you've got this going on with these people derailing a train or whatever.
Well, we don't know that.
But you've also got...
We know that they derailed... Oh, I'm sorry. I meant this latest event. I want to make that clear. The investigation is ongoing. Nobody's even talking about this being an act of terrorism at this point, I don't think. But I did think it was worthy of bringing it up. Go ahead.
Okay, and I agree with you. But the thing that's mind-boggling to me even more than this, whatever happened 3 or 4 weeks ago, is that you've got the government on the maiden voyage of a high-speed rail service. In the interview that you played, didn't know whether or not the tracks would sustain high speed. And then when you consider the trains, people, they run on diesel fuel, but the diesel runs the electric generators. And the brakes are also electric. They're not hydraulic. I mean, they're air brakes, but they're electrically actuated. There's no brake pedal in the train. There's a lever that operates, if I understand properly. So it's entirely possible that these things, that there was something with the train, with this high-speed system. It hadn't been tested properly. It wasn't a result of anything that the operator may or may not have done. It could have been that it's all run with a computer. It could be that somebody hacked a program to cause this to happen. Then add to that on the 22nd.
Well, you know, that's funny that you, wait a minute, before you speed off of that, it's funny that you mentioned that. There was another clip I wasn't going to play, but now that you mentioned that, listen to this.
Take you in depth with an analysis from an outside expert on today's biggest headline from the investigation. The train's engineer never activated the emergency brake, despite the fact the train was going 50 miles over the speed limit around a tight curve. That fact was revealed by the NTSB during a news conference we carried live right here on Cairo 7. Our Lindsay Sheldon watched it with a former BNSF engineer and current railroad accident investigator. And Lindsay, he called that fact, in his words now, unbelievable.
He did. John Hyatt has investigated hundreds of train crashes, and he served as a train engineer that is driving the train for a decade. His big question tonight, how could this train engineer never have slammed on the emergency brake, even as that train started to speed into that curve?
We have found out starting in January of this year.
He never tried to apply the brakes at all.
Cairo 7 watched the NTSB's briefing this afternoon with John Hyatt. We wanted his opinion on what could have happened to Amtrak Train 501. And the former train engineer and now crash investigator zeroed in on one fact.
In reviewing the event recorder, it looks like, in our preliminary analysis, that the emergency brake was automatically activated after when the accident was occurring, rather than being initiated by the engineer.
Hyatt explains that means the engineer never slammed on the emergency brake himself, even as the train was careening around a curve at 80 miles an hour, where the speed limit is only 30.
If you're coming into that curve, the second you see where you're at, you're in emergency. So it's almost like he flat out didn't see it coming. He just lost track of where he was at. Well, only other thing that explains that is that he was incapacitated, and even then, the train will shut itself down for over length of time if he's not doing certain things in the cab.
Views from Chomper 7 showed all 12 rail cars and one of the two engines jumped the tracks. Sound Transit confirmed to us tonight signs that the speed limit is dropping to 30 are posted 2 miles before the speed changes and also just before the speed zone approaching the curve. You can see when our Kevin McCarty rode this route on Friday how they slowed in that spot. Tonight, the NTSB confirmed that another person was in the cab with the engineer, a conductor who was familiarizing himself with the territory. But that fact puzzles Hyatt, too. Why didn't that person act?
But the other person in the cab has access to a handle to apply the emergency brakes if he sees a hazard coming.
Hyatt, who has investigated hundreds of railroad accidents for Bremseth Law Firm, has his own question. Had the engineer started applying the brakes at all?
Maybe the brakes weren't applying properly. Maybe he was applying the brakes and they weren't applying, and they, you know, he thought they were going to, but that's pretty unlikely.
Okay, so I just thought, since you were talking about the possibility of something going wrong with regard to maybe somehow it was hacked, I don't know that. Now this particular train, they said, did not have the positive train control. I don't know if there's some other way for somebody
Darren. It doesn't have to. I'm driving a truck, and I'm telling you, it's everything on it is electronic. With the computer, they can control the braking, and it doesn't have to be hacked. If you've got access to the system, they can control the braking. They can turn my windshield wipers on. They can turn my heat and air on. They can actually control steering if they want to. They can increase or decrease horsepower from remote locations. If I'm in Oregon and I need more power going up a mountain, they can give me more power being on the East Coast with a computer. It's all satellite connected. It's all open. And if you've got the codes, you can do it. Doesn't have to have it. Now, the reason that I mentioned that, I didn't know about this train deal. The reason that I mentioned that is you played the Modesto tow truck driver, sniper, ex-Marine, blah, 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 on the 22nd. In San Francisco, in Modesto. And then yesterday, I tried to call you this morning, if you see me.
Yeah, it was very close to showtime. I can't.
Okay.
I'm running around it.
I think this is important. Because over Hollywood, California, last night, in the night of the 22nd, over Hollywood, California, supposedly SpaceX re-entered the atmosphere and put on a light show that you wouldn't believe.
SpaceX.
Okay, was that Blue Beam being initiated?
What do you mean SpaceX?
The satellite coming back. SpaceX. The SpaceX.
Oh, satellite?
Or whatever, the rocket was re-entering the atmosphere.
Oh, okay.
Supposedly. I think it was a Blue Beam deal. If you watch that, that's on Yahoo's main page. That's on Face Like the Sun's YouTube channel. That's on Richie from Boston's YouTube channel. These people have sent videos. What's really unusual about that, Darren, is every video that you see of this thing, quote, re-entering Earth's atmosphere, it's going from right to left on every video that's been captured. You're telling me that out of all the cell phones on a Friday night in Hollywood, California, with all the people that are out in their backyards, that you don't get one image on YouTube or one video image anywhere of this thing being filmed from the other side of the event, going from left to right? They're all
Was it over the Pacific?
Tells me it's no. It was over Hollywood, California, over a hot and ready hamburger joint. You know, everyone in Hollywood could see it, but nobody could videotape it. From the other perspective, going left to right, everything was right to left, which tells me, false flag, people.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
All of this stuff. And no,
this is above my pay grade.
And how do Middle East languages read? They read from right to left.
that too. But I mean, you know, it's Darren. It would be like if I'm watching someone hit a ball to center field from left field. It's going from my right to the left. If I'm watching it from right field, it's going from my left to my right. Why are there no video captures going in the other direction? That are uploaded to YouTube, and everyone's saying, like, share, and subscribe, monetize my video, blah, 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 because mm-hmm. this is all staged.
Well, I don't know. There are some things that glow when they re-enter the atmosphere.
I know, but they're getting so close to the end game now.
Well, I don't doubt. Now, Blue Beam is real. Now, folks, I'm not saying that. I'm not saying this re-entry was Blue Beam, but we do know that Blue Beam is real. And what I alluded to, Harry Reid and the space alien program that he and I guess others at the federal level were supposedly investigating, the secret Pentagon program that was classified, just revealed in recent weeks about. The fact that the Pentagon had a secret program investigating space aliens. Why is this being revealed now? I mean, that's the real question I have. Why are they revealing it now? Are they gearing up? Hold on, John. Are they gearing up? Are they gearing up for some kind of a false flag involving flying saucers? Because we know in the past, Bill Clinton has talked about it. Reagan has talked about it. How the world would put aside its petty differences. We'd all come together as one world. We don't need these nation states. We could put all that behind us if we all had to unite against a common enemy if we were being invaded from aliens from beyond. So my question is that what they're gearing up for?
Well, my question is it real or is it technology? And my money is on technology.
Me too.
Well, I agree with you. I agree with both of you. Because here's the thing. I'll say this, and then I do have to go. I'll listen. But the whole thing is, these people have, we've been told by the Pope, enjoy this Christmas. It's the last, maybe the last one. Well, what are you talking about, Mr. Popey? Poppy Pope? And I'm, you know, think about this. They, and even Kissinger said that there's a time coming when people are going to beg to be protected. They'll be willing to do whatever it takes, ask for the government. And now in Chicago, you got them, the guy in Chicago talking about they may ask the UN to come in. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
They're getting ready to pull something off that we can't even imagine, even in our wildest, craziest speculations. They're getting ready to do it. And the sad part is the people that are asleep are going to hold their hands out and say, as long as no one can see those chains, put them on me. As long as you tell me I'm free and can go anywhere I want to go, put them on me. They're going to beg to be enslaved.
Yeah, and there are...
I hate to bring a Saturday morning to a downer.
Well, we do that every Saturday morning, John. This is the way Saturday mornings are around here.
Now listen.
Although this is, all right. Thanks, John. Appreciate the call.
Okay, thank you.
This is the way every Saturday.
I have some things to say about that whole train thing.
Sure.
There was a similar incident that happened on the East Coast with Amtrak. And ultimately, they blamed the fact that the operator was smoking marijuana or some stupid thing, and he lost attention. But as we know, these are always dialectics. And I haven't been following that story, you know, since day one. I did hear that news program that you played, the last one that you played.
Okay.
And the operator not putting on the brakes, he could have very well have been applying brakes without a response.
Yeah.
And the black box in the train could have been programmed to ignore him and to leave the recording in place as if he had not tried to stop the train.
Well, I think it's important to keep in mind what they said there, and that is that he had another conductor in the train compartment with him.
Well,
so
that's important.
Both of them were asleep at the switch, apparently, if we're to believe that this is operator error.
Well, I mean, you know, given the way that we know what they're doing with technology, I would say that they will use this as a proof that operator error, that a human being driving the train is more of a danger than technology running the train.
Yeah.
Which we know logically really isn't true.
So here's the takeaway, building on what you just said. We need to have self-driving trains. We need to have trains with no operators, because that would be much safer than having an operator. Right?
Yes.
Isn't that the lesson here?
So either way, could be
a completely natural, normal, real accident. But ultimately, the narrative will be shaped by the media and those officials in the media that steer the media to have the outcome necessary that they want, which leads to more technocracy.
Uh-huh. Exactly. Yeah, these things are dialectics. And especially, you know, you can tell when they're a dialectic is repeated, because that's what they do. They have a playbook, and they reuse these scenarios and just change the narrative for whatever point they are in terms of the project for what they're working on.
Exactly. I'll tell you what, we got a call on the line. Hold on just another moment, caller. We'll get to you right out of the break. I got to take this break here real quick, and we'll be back in a moment. Folks, this is Govern America, Darren Weeks, Vicki Davis, and you, 844-646-8376. If you'd like to call in, we'll take your call, 844-6-GOVERN, 844-646-8376. This is Govern America. We'll be back in a few.
Shami, I come seeking your wisdom.
My wisdom is this. It doesn't matter what you believe, as long as you are sincere in your belief.
Oh, you are so wise.
Yes. Now, why are you carrying a 2x4?
Oh, I'm a member of the religious wood bonkers, and we believe that if you hit a person on the side of the head with this holy 2x4, they will feel nothing but pleasure and go immediately to heaven.
You believe that?
You said believing is all that matters.
Yes, I did say that.
In fact, let me send you to heaven.
Hold on.
You're not supposed to duck.
Wait a minute. There are physical laws.
Quit ducking.
And one of those laws is that if you hit a person on the head with a 2x4, they will experience a lot of pain.
Wait, if there are physical laws to obey, then there must be spiritual laws to obey.
Now, I didn't say that.
Which means I may have to be concerned about truth. I may even have to examine if Jesus was who he claimed to be, which means reading the Bible.
Well, now, let's not get rash.
Another message from Lifeline Productions, the comic strip of radio, at lifelinepro.com.
With Govern America News this hour, I'm Darren Weeks. The Institute for Electric Innovation has issued a new report summarizing the deployments of smart meters so far. As of the end of 2016, electric companies had installed 72 million smart meters, covering 55% of U.S. households. Based on survey results and approved plans, deployments are estimated to reach 76 million smart meters by the end of 2017, covering about 60% of U.S. households, and are projected to reach 90 million by 2020. 40 electric companies in the United States have fully deployed smart meters, and another 50 are actively installing the smart meter technology. A new report released by Facebook on December 18th indicates the social media platform is handing over its user data to the government at an alarming rate. Every year, Facebook gets tens of thousands of requests for data from governments worldwide, including search warrants, subpoenas, or calls to restrict certain types of content. According to the company's report, these requests are increasing. In the U.S., the requests rose by 26% from 2016 to 2017, while globally, requests increased about 21%. The number of government requests for data has roughly tripled since 2013, when the company first started providing data on government requests. Facebook has also been more forthcoming. In the first 6 months of 2013, it granted the government only 79% of requests, while in the first 6 months of 2017, it granted 85% of all government requests for user data. And researchers at the Ohio State University Wexner Medical Center have developed a nanotechnology-based chip that can inject genetic code into skin cells to facilitate robots and people being able to make babies. In the future, scientists will be able to use a chip process called tissue nanotechnology to allow the genetic code of a robot to be passed on to its offspring to allow human and robot babies to be made. That's the news this hour. I'm Darren Weeks.
Did you hear?
What?
There was another burglary last night, just down the street, and the family was home sleeping.
Scary. You ever thought about buying a gun?
Yeah, but I'd worry about my kids. You hear about all these gun accidents.
Accidents do happen, it's true. But the fact is, less than 200 children die in gun accidents every year. Far more children accidentally drown or get killed riding bikes. And thousands of children die in car accidents every year.
Ooh, talk about scary.
And according to the statistics, people who own guns, parents like you and me, prevent over 1 million violent crimes every year and save countless lives.
Wow. Do you own a gun?
Yeah, I do.
Get the facts on gun control. Visit armedandsecure.org. That's armedandsecure.org.
Today, Americans would be outraged if UN troops entered Los Angeles to restore order. Tomorrow, they will be grateful. This is especially true if they were told that there was an outside threat from beyond, whether real or promulgated, that threatened our very existence. It is then that all the peoples of the world will pledge with world leaders to deliver them from this evil. The one thing that every man fears is the unknown. When presented with this scenario, individual rights will be willingly relinquished with a guarantee of their well-being granted to them by their world government. That was Henry Kissinger at the Bilderberg Conference in Evian's, France, in 1991, as overheard by a French journalist there. And that was the quote that John in Tennessee was referring to earlier in the break. And now we have a situation where, as what has been pointed out, there is a county commissioner in around the Chicago area that's calling for UN troops to be brought into Chicago. And other people are saying that there have already been signs of UN troops moving around there. We are getting very close to the point, folks, where literally we have martial law in our country being enforced by foreigners, foreign governments, foreign troops. Because that's what everything is today. It's a UN military. Our military, unfortunately, is a UN military. NATO is a new UN operation. It's all the same. It's global government, global troops. San Antonio, Texas, you're on the air.
Hey, Darren. It's Steve out in Fredericksburg.
Hey, Steve. Good to hear from you.
Hey. Nice to hear you guys. You know, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year if I don't hear from you.
And to you.
Before then, you know, I wanted to talk about the train. But when you talk about NATO coming in over there, you know, you hear that county commissioner is going over to the United Nations and talking about that. You know, that's probably not going to happen, but it reminds me of George Bush Jr. right after he invaded Afghanistan. where he says, well, I think it's a good time to start talking about Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the first time that they're going to be talking about it and getting people's heads around, well, why shouldn't we have the United Nations chair? They've done so much good. So, I don't know. It's going to be crazy.
Yeah, they've done a lot of good, all right. They've poisoned people. You know, the UN troops have molested children in various places of the world.
People with vaccines.
Yeah, killing people with vaccines. Yeah, they've done so much good around the world. What a great bunch of people.
Well, you remember the machetes and the Tutsis, right? You know, where they stood around and watched.
Mm-hmm.
I actually read one article this week that said that they were there to keep the peace, where they acknowledged that they were just there to watch. And but they've changed history on that episode of the United Nations.
Right. They're just there to monitor. There's a commercial that plays on that theme. A dentist looking at somebody's teeth and, you know, he finds the cavity and he says, ooh, that's a bad one. And but he doesn't fix it because his job is to monitor.
Right. Yeah, and expand the brand. Put on a blue helmet, stand there with a gun. You know, we're helping, see? Okay, get out of there. We don't need you there anymore. You know, you guys fight.
Well, war is peace, freedom is slavery, and ignorance is strength. We are living in Orwell's world, aren't we, Steve?
Yeah. Well, you know what?
We definitely are.
You know what occurred to me, I've been thinking about this, is that it seems to me they set up these dialectics where logic, it's a choice between logic and emotion. And there are some people that operate on emotion, you know, artists and whatever, and then there are other people that operate on logic, and essentially these dialectics get people that have operate on emotions to act, while the people who are logical sit back and say, well, this doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm. I actually see that played out, you know, the train story, right? I first uncovered that whole thing, or what was going on with the Puget Sound anarchist off of Darren's site, governamerica.com, and I went, what? Really? Antifa is promoting this? Wow, that's interesting. So I,
you know, what's even more interesting, Steve, I'm sorry to interrupt,
mm-hmm.
Even more interesting on that is we're seeing conservative Twitter accounts deleted left and right. All of the Antifa accounts, as far as I can tell, including the ones that are saying, hey, how great it is that we did this act of terrorism or we did this, you know, all of these sites are being left up, these accounts on Twitter. Now, so don't tell me, nobody can tell me that Twitter isn't run by a bunch of people that are promoting a certain direction in our country, and it's not a positive one. Go ahead, please.
Right. Well, what we were talking about, the emotions versus the logical, you know, aspect of the whole thing, I was sitting there trying to get my head around, is this real? What's actually happening? They're telling you one thing, not necessarily the truth, it's the story. But is that real that these guys actually posted it? Because as I continued my research, I saw some archives of the web page, you know, images that were pulled down. But I went over to the internetarchive.org, and I pulled their website, and I noticed that it was scrubbed. They did have a couple hits on that month, you know, on the 2 days after it. I believe it was published on the 20th, the article. But they had one on the 22nd, and you could scroll back through all the little articles that they were posting, and they completely scrubbed that entire day. Now, I don't know if it was scrubbed by Internet Archive, because, of course, they, you know, they're a gatekeeper as well. But it is interesting. But if you said that it was real, that Antifa was promoting this, and maybe they actually did pull this off somehow, but they wouldn't want to take credit for it because it would put public opinion against them, and they have to, you know, keep that going so they're not so hated. But if they derailed a train, if one of their little groups, you know, went a little bit too far, they'd have to make up a cover story. And I don't know if that plays in or not, but it's a thought.
Well, you know what's terrifying to me, Steve? I was just talking to a man the other day, ordinary guy. He called me a conspiracy theorist because I even, you know, it was actually, I don't want to say who it was, but there is a gentleman who brought it up before I did to this man, the fact that the Antifa had pulled off some of these stunts. And this other gentleman was connecting it to it. And so since he brought it up, I just decided to bring up the post and read it to him, like as I have here. And so the next day he came in and he says, what do you think about this fact that they're saying now that the train was going 80 miles an hour? And I says, well, you know, I never said that this was caused by Antifa. I don't know. The investigation has just begun. And anyway, during the course of the whole thing, he's almost attacking me for making this connection. And then he turns around and he says something to the effect of it being a legitimate tactic to accomplish certain means. And I said, what are you talking about, man? And he says, well, isn't that, you know, if fracking is ruining your community, wouldn't you say that, you know, any means necessary? I says, no, I wouldn't. I say you have to go through the political process. Because if we start engaging in guerrilla tactics, then we've lost it, folks. I mean, we're at a full-fledged war here. If we get to that point where we think that that's the only option we have. Now, granted, I know things are far gone, but when you get to that level where you're engaging in guerrilla tactics, you're engaging in things that...
War.
It is war.
It's war.
It is war. That is exactly right. And this just it's just the mindset here seems to be primed. And this guy wasn't, you know, he's not like what you'd think is a radical far out there, but he's just an ordinary guy. Doesn't follow the things that we follow. I presume he's not even really that politically active. But it really was something that struck me as odd that we've come this far that just ordinary people now think it's just... This is a legitimate tactic. You know,
well,
the end justifies the means.
I can argue it both ways, Darren. I can argue it both ways. Because we are in a war. The problem is getting over the hurdle of saying that this is not just domestic policies and not just our political system operating, but there is an actual war on the American people. And once you get over that hurdle and you understand that, then, yeah, you can say, well, tactics of war are legitimate.
Yeah, but I don't think we're there yet, Vicki.
Well, I could argue that, too. I mean, I can argue it both ways because I go through this all the time. You know, I find things and I write about them and I think this is not just government policy. They are facilitating the reverse colonization of our country. We're losing our country. Now, you know, I don't know. I suppose everybody has different thresholds of when they feel threatened enough to say that this is an actual war against us.
I'll tell you what I guess the distinction I draw is, like, for instance, we've been talking about the Bundys earlier in the show. Now, when the BLM came out there to confiscate their cattle, that to me was an act of war. And the Bundys' response to that, bringing in the militia to defend them, was a legitimate response to an act of aggression that had been committed against them. That's what I look at as being a legitimate response, but it isn't a guerrilla tactic. It is a very clear-cut case of self-defense against an act of aggression by an outside power. This outside power, of course, being the federal government in this case.
Right. It was a guerrilla action on the part of the government.
Yes. But, and it was an act, I would say, an act of war by the government against what should be its own people, although I don't like to use that terminology to express that the people are the property of the government, although that's how probably, that's how the government sees it. But there's a difference between going from that to going to sabotaging tracks, sabotaging other infrastructure. These are the things that the feds do. These are the type of...
The process of escalation. We keep going and marching towards this thermometer, one step, one step, one step. Now, this event where they attacked the tracks allegedly happened earlier this year, right? And we're not talking about the recent derailing here.
Right.
And they're getting more radicalized, and they're trying to tell everybody it's normal. Now, like we were talking about earlier, that they operate in a place of emotion. They're really pissed off. They don't like Donald Trump. They want socialism, communism, whatever. They're running on full-blooded emotion, and logic isn't working for them. So but they do have some logic, but they're escalating. 2 weeks ago, we had these folks out in Austin, the Antifa folks, and they were open carrying, right? You know, they were here protesting, you know, the right-wingers were protesting a girl that gets shot over on Fisherman's Wharf in San Francisco, and they're there open carrying. And, of course, they are. You know, it's an open carry capital. But masked men with AR-15s and AK-47s with hammer and sickle on their face.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, my God. They keep leveling up one, two, three in the middle of Austin, Texas.
I had no idea that had
cops, you know. Mm. Oh, it's crazy. You should have seen some of the images. And,
I can only imagine.
Alex Jones is down there, and one of Alex Jones's guys got into a scuff with them, and a lot of people did, and so there are lawsuits pending. But just seeing that imagery, when it levels up one more, I'd say we're getting to the place where the emotional few, right, they or many, I don't know, they're going to cross that border. And they're going to start taking out violence. And I'm not saying that this happened with the train derailment. That's whatever it is. There's no thing pointing that direction, really. But when it does get crossed, it's going to get ugly. And I never thought that I'd see the leftists doing it. And I hate
communists. Yeah. See, this is the thing. What you just described worries me greatly. Because having them open carry, which is... You know, I mean, let's face it, it's our right to do that here in our country. My worry is the reasons why they are doing it and agents provocateur in the crowd. You know, all that has to happen is this powder keg explode and have some kind of major incident, a shootout between the two sides. And it couldn't, you know what, it might even be the two sides, the right-wing side could even be funded by the same people that fund the left-wing side. I mean, we've been seeing that recently. What's that?
Mm-hmm. I said that's probably the best way to do it.
Yeah.
Fund them both.
But whether or not it is, you can have a situation where there's a clash, an exchange of gunfire, and... Next thing you know, this serves as the foundation for gun grabbing everywhere.
Well, that's true, but in the case of what went on in Austin, logic would say, where were the police? Why weren't the police responding to these masked people beating people up who are simply trying to attend a vigil? Where were the police? Well, the police must be on the side of the Antifa.
Well, maybe not the officers, but the people commanding them.
Let me finish, which goes to what I said about our country being reverse colonized. Okay, yeah. And in the system of globalization, they targeted the mayors and the cities as the... the weapons against the nation state. Okay, so we've got the World Bank funding programs in our cities, and organizations telling our mayors they've got to formulate their own foreign policy. Well, their own foreign policy will be where they get support from. They get support from the global system, mm-hmm. not the domestic system, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, so it's a complete disaster in terms of foreign and economic policy and how it affects people on the ground.
In every case we've seen, and it's a good point to bring up, where were the police, why weren't the police intervening? Because we've seen this in every case on these college campuses where outsiders are being brought in to supposedly protest, but it becomes violent. They start fires and beat up people and various other things. The police have been ordered to stand down, and I could keep coming back to that one video where that gentleman was asking the cops, I've been watching people get beat up every day. Why aren't you guys doing anything? And he keeps referring them to the guy, whoever it was, that handles the press relations for the police department, the PR department of the local police department. You'll have to ask them. And they're just sitting there, the three of them, watching all this happen. It's obvious, right, they were ordered to stand down.
And the federal government, the global system, has a policy of non-force. Okay, non-force. So what they allow are groups to engage in force against other groups. It's like gang warfare, officially sanctioned gang warfare.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what we're dealing with, you know, just it's gang warfare. While the officialdom, it's like Jeff Sessions, you know, telling these states and cities, well, we're going to withhold your money. When what's actually being done is that crimes are being committed. It's illegal immigration is against the law.
Yes.
And if they started enforcing the law against some of these public officials, you can bet the other ones would get in line fairly quickly, but they're not doing it. They're letting it happen, and they're just saying, well, we're just not going to give you any money. And I heard one of the amounts of money that's going to be withheld, and it's a pittance, an absolute pittance.
It's a look-good move, and Jeff Sessions is phony opposition. It's just like this executive order blocking the property of persons involved in serious human rights abuse or corruption that was just signed a couple of days ago by Donald Trump. I don't know if you were following this or not, but this invokes the Global Magnitsky Act, the Human Rights and Accountability Act. He named a bunch of people whose money that they're going to be blocking. And a lot of these people are people that do business with a lot of different people in foreign countries. But a lot of people, you know, this is purportedly to fight corruption. And I see people on the internet saying that this is, oh, look, Trump's going after the Clintons. They don't mention the Clintons in here. I don't see anywhere in the executive order or the annex, which is on the Treasury Department website. I'll put the links in the show notes. But there's no mention of the Clintons in here. No, they mention a lot of other names I don't recognize. And this, by the way, is something Obama started and included, you know, included in this also are sanctions against certain associates of Vladimir Putin. So there is continuity, again, of the underlying policies from the last administration to the present one. It does, I think, offer up proof that there's no real collusion going on with the Russians by the Trump administration any more than the last administration. But it's certainly not the real corruption that needs to be dealt with here, in my opinion, are people like George Soros and people like the Clintons. But there's no movement toward that. The real enemies of our republic are never really dealt with. They deal with foreign people and people having some kind of influence or some kind of contact with them. There's a lot of things about the Democratic Republic of Congo in there. Anyway, Steve, I don't know if we... Did you have something else you wanted to say there?
No, I'll let you guys go. I just like sitting back and listening to you. Thanks for the show. Appreciate
hey,
you both.
Hey, appreciate you, man.
Thank you.
Take it easy. God bless. Bye-bye.
Hey, that reminds me. I found some new information about Benghazi that I didn't realize. The Chinese were involved in Benghazi, and they were trying to make deals for oil with the opposition groups. And as soon as that ambassador was killed, apparently there was a message posted on the Chinese embassy raising the flag of the opposition forces that killed him, which I thought was really very interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting.
And I'll get the links to those articles, and they'll be posted in the show notes.
Okay, sounds good. All right, we're out of this hour already. Hour number three is straight ahead. You're welcome to join in if you want. 844-646-8376. That's 844-6-GOVERN. 844-646-8376. This is Govern America. Darren Weeks, Vicki Davis, and we'll be back here in just a moment.
I'm Steven, a student at Hillsdale College. Here is president of Hillsdale College, Dr. Larry Arn, on the enduring importance of federalism.
Many in Washington today have grown so accustomed to centralized bureaucracy that they think of federalism as old-fashioned, kind of like fife and drum music. Those who wrote the Constitution saw federalism as a vital principle of free government in a large republic. The division of power between the federal government, state governments, and local governments would serve as an important protection against tyranny. The founders also understood that while the federal government is essential for national matters like foreign policy and defense, governments closer to the people were far better suited to oversee local matters. As we see in the problems that result from centralized bureaucracy today, there's nothing out of date about the founders' argument for federalism.
This Constitution Minute was brought to you by Hillsdale College. To receive a free pocket constitution and declaration, go to constitutionminute.com.
Most people realize their body needs clean water to function properly. Pure is the cleanest water, also known as distilled water. Some frauds pushing fake science and ignorant people repeating their disinformation and half-truths will tell you distilled water leaches minerals from the body. What they fail to tell you is distilled water only attracts and flushes inorganic minerals from your body. These are minerals your body cannot process and can interfere with your proper body functions. Distilled water does flush these inorganic materials from your body and is an effective and natural way to cleanse your body. ABR sells a distiller that distills 1 gallon every 3.5 hours. Go to AmericanVoiceRadio.com, click on the superstore, go to the distiller, check the pricing and how to order, and watch the video explaining in detail why distilled water is pure water.
documenting the crisis of our republic, waging war on the New World Order. This is Govern America. Govern America.
Just south of the Great Lakes capital city, covering all of North America via satellite, micro-FM stations all across the country, and streaming live from FEMA Region 5. This is the third and final hour of Govern America. Darren Weeks and Vicki Davis here with you, as we are every Saturday. Hope you'll tell somebody about the broadcast. And that continues to be the 23rd of December, 2017, here, as we're rapidly winding down the year of 2017. And hard to believe how fast the time goes. I mentioned the Magnitsky Act and the recent action by the Trump administration. This executive order he just signed a moment ago declares a state of a national emergency with regard to corruption. Now, where the corruption and the national emergency really should be, if he's going to declare one, is the corruption within our own government. But he's not pointing that out, including some of the people that he's brought into his own administration, I might add. But he says, I, Donald Trump, President of the United States, find the prevalence and severity of human rights abuse and corruption that have their source in whole or in substantial part outside the United States, such as those committed or directed by persons listed in the annex to this order, have reached the scope and gravity that they threaten the stability of international political and economic systems. Human rights abuse and corruption undermine the values that form an essential foundation of stable, secure, and functioning societies, have devastating impacts on individuals, weaken democratic institutions, degrade the rule of law, perpetuate violent conflicts, facilitate the activities of dangerous persons, and undermine economic markets. The United States seeks to impose tangible and significant consequences on those who commit serious human rights abuse or engage in corruption, as well as to protect the financial system of the United States from abuse by these same persons. I therefore determine that serious human rights abuse and corruption around the world constitute an unusual and extraordinary threat to national security, foreign policy, and economy of the United States, and I hereby declare a national emergency to deal with the threat. I hereby determine and order Section 1A, all property and interests in property that are in the United States and hereafter come within the United States, or that are hereafter come within the possession or control of any United States person, of the following persons are blocked and may not be transferred, paid, exported, withdrawn, or otherwise dealt in. 1. The persons listed in the annex to this order, and they name off in the annex. It was published, there was a list, which I'll put the link in the show notes, on the Treasury Department website. The Treasury Department is in charge of this, the Secretary of the Treasury, as you'll see here in a moment. 2, any foreign person determined by the Secretary of the Treasury, in consultation with the Secretary of State and the Attorney General, A, to be responsible for or complicit in or to have directly or indirectly engaged in serious human rights abuse. B, to be current or former government official or a person acting for or on behalf of such an individual or such an official who is responsible for or complicit in or has directly or indirectly engaged in corruption, including the misappropriation of state assets, the expropriation of private assets for personal gain, corruption related to government contracts, or the extraction of natural resources or bribery, or 2, the transfer or facilitation of the transfer of the proceeds of corruption, C, to be or have been a leader or official of an entity, including any government entity that has engaged in or whose members have engaged in any of the activities described in subsections, and they name off a bunch of them, of this section relating to the leader's or official's tenure or an entity whose property and interest in property are blocked pursuant to this order as a result of activities related to the leader's or official's tenure or to have engaged or attempted to engage in any activities described in these sections. Any person determined by the Secretary of the Treasury in consultation with the Secretary of State and the Attorney General to have materially assisted, sponsored, or provided financial material or technological support for or goods and services to or in support of any activity described in these sections. And it goes on from there. Any person whose property and interests in property are blocked pursuant to this order. So basically, there are a number of different entities that they name off In this Treasury Department website, there's some associated with the Kremlin. Go ahead.
That's the kind of illogic that could just set me off like a rocket, because everything that they named there as happening in a foreign country, you know, the criminal acts that are being allowed to happen in a foreign country are happening here.
Yes.
And our own public officials here are doing the same thing, because the economic system of the world is global.
Yes.
And so we have, you know, these issues in foreign countries that should not be our business, but are our business because it involves interests in the United States mm-hmm. that have invested over there. It's so insulting that he would put something like that out. You know what we need? We need for Russia and the Ukraine to do an equivalent. We could call it the John Smith Act, you know, because over here in this country, they're doing the same damn thing.
Well, the question I have, are they doing this in part? And there were other things, other governments that were named, but I wonder if part of this isn't the intelligentsia, which we know Trump is being led by the hand by the intelligentsia every step of the way. They give him his briefings, and they tell him what they want him to think or know, and he acts based upon the information that he's given, whether or not that information is correct or not. So even if Trump means well in certain cases, he's acting on information that's being fed to him by people that don't mean well. And you have this situation where in the Weekly Standard published this: Trump administration sanctions five people under Magnitsky Act. Now, there were more than five people, but these are the people that they're focusing on. And it says the law allows the government to freeze assets of human rights abusers. The move is likely to irk Russia. In this article, they talk about the designations come amid controversy over a 2016 meeting that Trump officials attended with Russian lawyer Natalia Veselnitskaya. You remember that Russian lawyer that met with Trump Jr.?
Yeah, I do.
That's who they're talking about here. She was the one, if you recall, she was fighting to get them to overturn this Magnitsky Act. And that's really the reason why she was meeting or wanted this meeting with Trump Jr. They offered the bait and switch where, hey, we got dirt on Hillary. And when Trump Jr. met with her, found out, oh, no, she's just lobbying to have this law overturned. Then they lost interest and the meeting was cut short. But that's what they're talking about here.
Yeah. Well, and when you look behind it, who's the one that authored the Magnitsky Act? It was John McCain and a liberal Democrat that I can't think of what his name is at the moment. But now John McCain is president of the International Republican Institute, which is one of the institutes of NED. And what the mission of NED is to promote, quote, democracy around the world. And the idea is freedom of election, freedom of speech, you know, the basic freedoms. But what they do is they bring in insurgents to lead the people of a country to form an insurgency to operate against their own government. So they create the very, and then the government responds with, you know, what are called human rights violations.
Mm-hmm.
But so they create this problem, and then they implement sanctions against the government that responds to the insurgency that they created.
Exactly. A very good point. That's not to say that certain governments, you know, don't brutalize their own people without any provocation many times. But you're right. The State Department is, in many respects around the world, we've documented it on the show over and over again. They're provocateurs. They poke. They fund the research. I never will forget Victoria Nuland making that speech in front of the big Chevron sign, talking about how we put all $5 billion into, what was it, Ukraine for their Orange Revolution? We spent $5 billion to have the government that we want there to promote democracy. As you mentioned, NED, which is the National Endowment for Democracy.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, that's the kind of illogic that just drives me right straight up the wall. It turns me into like an emotional basket case because it just, I can't handle it almost. But, I don't know if what's going on in our country qualifies as political ponderology, which is the politics of evil, but if it isn't, it's darn close.
Yeah, the Weekly Standard says three of the five people facing sanctions played a significant role in the $230 million tax fraud scheme uncovered by Russian lawyer Sergei Magnitsky, who was arrested in 2008 and died in a Moscow jail. Treasury also designated Chechen leader Ramzan Kadyrov for extrajudicial killings and torture, among other human rights violations. The 2012 law allows U.S. governments to freeze the assets of designated human rights abusers and ban them from entering the United States. So, they may be dealing with real corruption here. And I'm not a defender of human rights abuses by any stretch of the imagination. But that's what you made the point, Vicky. The point here is that everything they're accusing everybody else of doing, they're guilty of doing themselves.
Right. What would you call the Bundys being in jail for 2 years? That is a human rights violation. They were never violent.
Well, what about the murdering of Lavoie Finicum? You don't get much more human rights violations than that. There was no need to set up that roadblock. These guys were attending meetings all over the place. They could have picked them up anytime they wanted to. Just like with the Waco situation. That never had to happen. What was his name?
David
Koresh, thank you. He was out and about all the time. They could have arrested him anytime they wanted to if they wanted him. Why did they have to burn up all those little children, all the women there? They wanted to make a point, folks. That was our Tiananmen Square.
And the same is true of Ruby Ridge, Randy Weaver, and Ruby Ridge.
Yes,
they didn't need to surround his cabin and kill his wife and baby. They could have arrested him when he went to town.
Yeah, yeah. So you want to talk about human rights abuse, Mr. Trump? Why don't we deal with the human rights abuses right in our own government? You were elected on the platform of draining the swamp. Before we focus on swamps in other countries, and I'm sure there are plenty, but let's focus on our own swamp. Let's focus on the scumbags in these federal agencies. And I certainly hope Congress really will do some real investigating and some real prosecution. But you know what? I'm not going to turn purple on their behalf. I'm not going to sit here holding my breath. Because I've seen this movie before, and it doesn't end well.
I have this great clip by a guy named James Risen. He was a reporter for the New York Times, and he talked about terrorism, and he called it political theater for a political purpose.
Sounds legit to me.
Yeah, and so everything that is happening in this country, in one way or another, is terrorism of the population. It was terrorism by the government against the Bundys. Is terrorism. Fracking is a terroristic act, as far as I'm concerned, because I don't believe they're giving us the honest truth. I believe it's an action of war against us. But, setting that aside, I believe it's an act of terrorism. So everything that's going on is terroristic in its nature, and it's being perpetrated at the highest levels of government due to global policies. They're no longer focused on the United States as a nation state. They are looking outward globally.
Mm-hmm.
And they are implementing policies globally that benefit just a few thousand people at the top of the world.
Yeah, there's...
And so everything that they're doing is against the interests, and it's not just our country, it's all countries. It's against the interests of the average people in the world.
At the U.S. Department of Treasury, there is the Office of Foreign Assets Control. And this is the office that is charged with implementing this order for the Magnitsky Act, which Trump just signed. Now, they have a big, big, long list of people that have been sanctioned under this law. One of them I noticed was the Gertler Family Foundation, which I thought was interesting last night as I was looking at this. And so I put it into a search engine, and they have a web presence. It's like any other foundation, the Gertler Family Foundation. And I clicked on their partner page. You know what came up?
What?
One of the partners were UNICEF. So if we're going to really sanction people that do business and provide material support for all these organizations that they're mentioning here, shouldn't we be sanctioning UNICEF as well?
Well, one would think. I think Trump did get us out of participation in the... maybe it was UNESCO.
It was UNESCO.
Yeah. Well, you know who has done a lot of work on charity fraud? That brings me back to the City of London, you know,
mm-hmm.
With the political organization of the country. And charity fraud, where they set up these foundations that are actually operating not for charitable purposes, but for political purposes. And it's by design that they are operating for political purpose. And that is contrary to the whole idea of a charity.
Yeah.
And so you have companies, well, it's like the Uniform Law Commission, for crying out loud, in Chicago. They're the ones that write the laws to keep this, the laws in the states uniform. Well, they have a foundation that sits on the side that can accept donations for special projects.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's where you get your special interest legislation uniformly applied throughout the United States. And just about any business at this point has a charitable foundation associated with it.
Yeah, it seems like I remember something about there being something in this tax bill that does away with at least some of the exemptions for the charitable organizations, unless they're over $10,000. Did you see anything about that? I'm trying to remember now what the details of that were, because I never thought they would ever touch charitable donations because of the foundations.
Yeah, no, I didn't see that. I didn't.
Okay, we'll have to look into that a little bit.
Details of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, I don't know, I'll have to look into it deeper. But, and one thing I will say for them is apparently they did away with this individual mandate for Obamacare, which I view to be one of the most draconian things about the whole Obamacare program in the first place, is holding a gun to people's heads, expecting them to buy a product, you know, it being forced upon them. So at least...
Well, it was creating a self-funding, self-taxing system, you mm-hmm. know, effectively for direct taxation from subscriber A to subscribers B, C, and D,
mm-hmm.
Without government intervention.
Yeah. Exactly. And it's, you know, so, all of this, everything they're doing is taking a step, moving us further toward the single-payer system, which I find, talking to people, is surprisingly popular, at least based upon the number of people that I speak to. I just don't understand how people can't see the dangers of this. You're putting government in control of every aspect of your life when you allow them to administer health care and have a monopoly on it.
They already do. Do you know that the billing for your doctor's office visits and for hospitals, it's all mandated because of the Medicare and Medicaid programs. The government tells them how they can bill and what they can bill for. And they've made the billing so complex that they actually bill, and I know you've heard this before, but they actually can bill for an aspirin. And when you have accounting like that, it increases the price of whatever your service is exponentially.
Yeah.
So it's government that's driving up the cost of health care. And they're providing not only that, but they're providing a lot of money for medical research. They provide a lot of money for the training of doctors and a lot of money for the medical institutions, for the healthcare institutions. And then they say to, you know, a certain group of people, but you can't access any of this. They provide deductions for employers to provide health care for their employees. That's a government expenditure, providing a benefit to an employee, to one person, that is not available to another person, a person who works at a McDonald's, or maybe not McDonald's, I'm not sure, but who works at a small store doesn't have that benefit that is provided by the government because their employer doesn't make that kind of money.
Yeah.
So it's a system that is totally unfair from top to bottom, and then they segregate out this group of people who, you know, for a variety of reasons, don't have insurance.
Yeah, and they pit people against each other.
Or don't have the means to pay, and they say, you don't deserve this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And even if they work and they pay taxes and they help to support this whole big funding infrastructure that the government has created.
Well, I'm all for getting people out of anything having to do with government being in control of our lives. And I'm not talking about privatization. I think the government has no business in any of this. But because they are, and they create the mess of it, and they engineer the high prices, it provides the platform upon which for them to scream and yell that we need more control. We need to go whole hog even further down that road.
Well, I'm writing a paper right now that I'll probably take me a couple days to finish. But what the thesis of it is that our administrative state, the agencies of government, they start out with a mission that is a good mission, but over time, their layers of complexity are added, and we are at the point where they have the appearance of doing good, but they're not doing good. They're doing actually harm to our country. And we're actually at the point where we're losing our country because of it, because of how the administrative state operates. And it's not just a function of our administrative state. I think it's you would find this true of any big bureaucracy. Mm-hmm. But they have the appearance of doing good things, but they're actually doing very harmful things.
Right. I couldn't agree more. Moving along here in the interest of time, We mentioned earlier the whistleblower that came forward with regard to the Bureau of Land Management, from the Bureau of Land Management. Now we have another whistleblower that has come forward to sound the alarm about corruption from within a federal agency. This time it's the CIA. A CIA whistleblower has come forward. His name is Robert Cody Snodgrass. He says that the agency attempted to set him up as a patsy. I think this is a very, very interesting, his story. He has an incredible story. The allegations are his own. I have no way of verifying them, but he does sound credible to me, especially in light of a recent development that just happened, which I will get to in just a moment. But I want to play a clip from the Hagman Report just a day or two ago, where Cody is on the show talking about how the CIA recruited him, and he went through his career doing these difficult covert operations, and then something happened. And this goes back to our earlier conversation about the Murrah Federal Building in Oklahoma City. Listen to what this guy has to say. It's a little bit long. I cut it down to 12 minutes. I promise you it's worth every bit of it. I'm going to have to interrupt you here to take the break in a moment, though. But let's listen to what Cody has to say here.
Anyway, in 94, in October, I was approached by another operative. His name is Harold Leonard. I can use his name. He's dead now. And Harold Leonard, we went out to a rural area under the trees, and he had a backpack with $500,000 in cash in it. And he said, "We've got a job for you." And I said, "Which country are we going to?" You know, I thought it was Saudi Arabia or something. We'd had job offers over there with the royal family guarding their kids and stuff. And I said, "Where?" He said, "No, it's here." And I said, "Well, what kind of building is it? What kind of job is it?" He said, "It's an EOD job, explosive demolitions." I said, "Okay, what's the target?" And he said, "It's a domestic building. It's a federal building." And I said, "What?" And he said, "Yeah, it's a federal building." This was October 94, so. Anyway, I went off on him, and I said, which building is it? He said, "It's the Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building in Oklahoma City." And I was at the end of my career anyway, and I knew it was a patsy job right off the bat, especially for such a low amount of money.
What's an Apache job?
Apache job. A patsy job is one like McVay took, you know. It's
oh,
where you're
a patsy. Patsy.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I'm talking too fast. I'm sorry. But anyway, he said $500,000 now, and $500,000 job is done and so forth. So I said, "No, I'm sick of this."
Let's take the break. We'll finish this on the other side, because I want to talk about this real briefly, because there's been a development here that is very worrying in this case. Stay with us, folks. This is Government America. Vicki Davis is here. I'm Darren Weeks. We'll be back in a moment.
In a recent closed-door speech to donors, politicians, and media, Bill Clinton spoke about American gun owners. Quote, "A lot of these people, all they've got is their hunting and their fishing, or they've been listening to this stuff for so long that they believe it all," unquote. And we all remember Barack Obama's 2008 comments to a room of San Francisco elites. Quote, "It's not surprising then they get bitter. They cling to guns or religion," unquote. The arrogance of their superiority requires this reminder. They don't rule us. They don't give us rights. We grant them power. They don't make us safe. We pay to protect them. They don't make us free. We're free already. And as long as we have the Second Amendment, we always will be. We are America, and our politicians are only as powerful as we, the people, allow them to be.
Government America News this hour, I'm Darren Weeks. In a speech last week, U.S. National Space Council Executive Director Scott Pace rejected the idea that space was a global commons or the common heritage of mankind and vowed to make the United States the most attractive jurisdiction in the world for private sector investment and innovation in outer space. Pace says that the Trump administration will work with other governments and international organizations to develop fair rules for space, but that the goal is for the United States to become the most attractive jurisdiction in the world for private sector investment and innovation in outer space. Efforts by Facebook to label stories and sources of information as fake news has backfired. The site began showing warnings next to certain articles in December to alert people that so-called third-party fact-checking websites deem them misleading. Now the social media company has announced it is abandoning the fake news red flags because they were making the stories more believable to its users. The FCC is slapping Sinclair Broadcast Group with a $13.4 million fine for running news stories on a cancer foundation, but failing to disclose that the foundation was paying for them to air. The agency said it was the largest fine ever imposed for a violation of its sponsorship identification rules. It's getting tougher to work at the Environmental Protection Agency in Washington, D.C. Budget cuts, restructuring of the agency, and a global warming skeptic in the White House running the show were difficult enough. But employees at the bureaucratic agency discovered this week that raw sewage was spewing out of the water fountains. An early morning email notified employees that a water line backup was causing an issue with the fountains. Dan Becker said, quote, "A sewer problem at EPA headquarters has resulted in poop exploding out of water fountains," unquote. Becker is the director of the Safe Climate Campaign. That's the news this hour. I'm Darren Weeks.
One of the most popular movies during the Christmas season is the old favorite, It's a Wonderful Life. It's the story of George Bailey, a compassionate but dejected businessman who is ready to give up on life when his guardian angel, Clarence, intervenes. Clarence shows him life as if George had never been born, and George discovers that for all his supposed mistakes and failures, he has brought joy and life to countless people. It really is a wonderful life, and not just on TV. Each and every person has so much potential for good, and nowhere is this potential greater than with an unborn child. This Christmas, and always, please work to preserve the wonder of life for the unborn and their mothers. This has been a perspective on life from National Right to Life. For more information, visit our website at nrlc.org. That's nrlc.org.
All right, we're back. This is Govern America in the home stretch of the broadcast. I wanted to share some of this interview with you as quickly as we can here regarding Cody Sodgris, or Snodgris is his name, Robert Cody Snodgris. As I said, he was interviewed on the Hagman Report, and he talks about how he was recruited to the CIA and some of the covert operations they sent on. You know, he didn't go into detail about a lot of the past stuff, but I take it it was pretty rough, and he'd been through a lot because he had talks about having post-traumatic stress disorder, and his body was physically messed up. So apparently there were some really rough things that they went through, and then they approached him, I think he said back in 94, talking about, you know, here's a bag full of money, we'll give you half now and half later. And the Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building was mentioned as the target. So we pick it up from there.
I'm having bad dreams at night. I had severe PTSD. I was drinking heavily to cover my PTSD. I had a lot of broken ribs and injuries and stuff. And I said, I can't take this anymore, and I'm not doing it. And that's the point at which I turned from CIA asset to a liability. When the building went off later in April 19th of 1995, I went down between Tulsa and Oklahoma City to some old safe houses that we had used during the CIA operations over in Arkansas way back in the 80s. And we'd been moving arms out of the armories and all that stuff. So I left the country for a while. I came back. I was afraid they would kill me because I had operational knowledge of this black op. And so by the time I got back, McVeigh and Nichols had been indicted and arrested. And so you fast forward through that to 1997, and I was in Colorado Springs, Colorado, with there was an ATF DEA undercover operation called Operation Stingray. It was a code name. And in that operation, I met ATF agent Blake L. Butler. He would later get the nation's top cop award from Vice President Al Gore and United States Attorney General Janet Reno at a D.C. dinner party. And I found out later that Blake Butler had been at the Waco Branch Davidian compound when they had the gunfight back on February 28th of 93. And he was also at the Ruby Ridge Randy Weaver standoff where Vicki Weaver had been shot. And then he was also know, had their little photo op for the gun thing. And so we started talking, and he asked me about that. And I had some people for the Defense Intelligence Agency I worked with, Captain Glenn Wilson from Vietnam. He was with Janet Reno's head of No-Knock Narcotics down in Dade County, Florida, when she was the DA down there before Clinton bumped her up to the White House. So anyway, they were on TV, and we started talking. And I didn't know we were on 4-millimeter hidden cameras. And so I started blabbing my mouth about all these old CIA ops in Arkansas with Bill Clinton and Hillary and the PD file rings and the drugs and the arms and the Rose Law Firm and the whole thing. And then I also told him the job of how the CIA had offered me the job to bomb the Murrah Building for $1 million. And he started fidgeting around because I didn't know at the time, but he had been at the Murrah Building, supposed to be there that day. And anyway, so they planted me with fake evidence. Okay, and then arrested me on October 7th of 99, and the CIA came from D.C., and they asked me direct questions about Bill Clinton, and then they turned me over to the FBI, the ATF, DEA, and the IRS. Well, they put me in front of Judge Edward Nottingham, and he had been nominated to his judgeship in the 10th Circuit Federal Court up here in Denver by none other than ex-director of Central Intelligence, George Bush Sr., and then the prosecutor on the case was none other than Tom Strickland. He was directly appointed by Bill Clinton to be the United States attorney in the 10th Circuit. So the fix was in. Tom Strickland had been at a Denver law firm with Brownstein, Hyatt, Faber, and Strickland. Now, Norman Brownstein was the principal partner of this law firm. Later, we found out that Norman Brownstein was in the CIA's Council of Six Attorneys in the 1970s when George Bush Sr. was Director of Central Intelligence. So the fix was in here in the court. That's why they brought McVeigh up here, so they could rig the trial. And we have, in this book, it's 700 pages. It has tremendous amounts of documentation. We've got 20,000 pages of discovery evidence. We have ATF DEA tapes. I snuck tape recording equipment through all the metal detectors and x-ray machines inside the U.S. Attorney's Office. And I have the nation's top cop asking me if I ever worked for the CIA and stuff. I tape recorded all of them. This stuff's never been out in public. The stuff about Waco and a lot of this stuff, no one's ever heard these stories. But it's an amazing story. So the short version is they threw me three cells down from Timothy McVeigh. Had a perfect record. No traffic tickets. No drugs. No violence. And they planted me with evidence. Okay. And then they put another guy in there named Terry James Gagan. And he took a van load of C4 plastic explosives from his CIA handlers in Denver down to Trinidad. And his contacts were three Middle Eastern men. And he eyewitnessed plans to the Murrah Building in English with them. He got spooked. He went back up to the Secret Service office in Denver and told them, hey, there's something weird. I think I'm going to be a patsy. I don't know what's going on. I did my job, and I don't like these Middle Eastern guys or something weird. And so anyway, CIA got wind of it. They planted his house with evidence, and the FBI arrested him. So they had me and Kerry James Gagan and Nichols and McVeigh all up there, the people that were the principals of the Patsy operation. We'll talk about the real operation here later. So anyway, like a long story short, after all this, they had me there. You know, they stripped out my bed. I was sleeping on concrete. All I had was a pair of skivvies. I didn't eat for days. I thought the CIA was going to poison me to kill me. And then I was there the day they took McVeigh out. And then later he was executed at the Terre Haute FCI, the Federal Correctional Institute, Terre Haute, Indiana, on June 11th, 2001. But anyway, Kerry James Gagan was sitting, told by Judge Nottingham, pre-trial to go to the Springfield, Missouri FCI, the Federal Correctional Institute there. They have a medical facility and a mental facility. And that's what a favorite thing. See, Judge Nottingham was a CIA judge. He was nominated by CIA director. Every case that went to him in the 10th Circuit was steered. They used something called the Promise software in the DOJ, the Justice Department, and it correlated all the cases. Anyone that had CIA or NSA contacts, national security cases, were all steered to him, and he made sure they never saw the light of day. His favorite trick was to send the inmate for a mental evaluation pre-trial, make sure they're fit to stand trial, of course, and then they'd give them the juice, put them in straight jackets, scramble their minds so they could never talk about the CIA. And so the fix was in here. And so I went 4 years. I never had a motions hearing. Any hearings they had were sealed. They kicked the cork transcribers out. It was a classic CIA case. And after 4 years, then Judge Nottingham finally said, well, you know, you can have a motion hearing on July 24th of 2003. And so that was the final hearing. He said, if we don't have a hearing, we're going to dismiss the case. So 2 weeks prior to that, on July 7th, 2003, I was cleaning my car's windshield in a Walmart parking lot in Colorado Springs. My wife was shopping. And I never saw it. I just heard it. We had hired a tape expert, William Valentine, that had coffee with Clinton and Bush and Reagan all in the White House. He was a CIA tape expert. His job was debugging the White House. We hired him, and we had absolute proof that they tampered with tapes, planted with evidence. So the ATF division and DEA in Colorado Springs were all going down when we got this evidence. They were all going to prison, and we had 100% irrefutable evidence. So 2 weeks before this hearing, I was cleaning the windshield on my LTD car in Walmart, and up I heard a motor revving and tire squealing, and I was leaning across the hood of my 1990 Crown Victoria LTD, and the impact, it totaled my LTD in the parking lot while it was parked. I have all the police reports and all the stuff. It knocked me back up in the air, and I landed on the top of a roof of another car, rolled over the hood, bounced off the passenger fender of another car, and hit a concrete light pole. And my doctor told me I was very, very lucky to be alive. So 2 weeks after that, I was in an outpatient physical therapy unit when I got out of the hospital. And I was leaving that walking on a cane. And I came around my car, and there's a Colorado Springs police cruiser sitting there with the motor running. And they floored the motor and charged me in the parking lot. Sparks flying when they jumped the curb. It swerved sideways. And about 4 feet away from me, sitting in there in a Colorado Springs police uniform, was none other than the nation's top cop, ATF agent Blake L. Butler. He was one of the guys that was fixing to go to prison. And he shook his finger at me and threatened me and then floored the car and took off. So I was pretty shook up. I'm almost done here. And I went home, and I was watching a movie with my wife and kid later that night. And up in my yard pulls up an SUV. And I looked out. I didn't know who it was, and I thought it was the CIA who's going to kill me. And I didn't want my young son to see his father get shot. So I went in there. I went down there. I was ready to die. I didn't take a gun. I didn't take anything. And I walked around the window. I rolled the window down. And it was Harold Leonard, the guy that offered me the job to bomb the Murrow Building for the CIA. And I said, "What's up?" You know. He said, "Look, this court thing." He said that we had got orders to kill you if you go talk or talk about any of this. And then he pointed up at the house where my wife and kid were, and he says, "We've got orders to kill your family, too." So after that, I called my attorney the next day, Harvey Steinberg. He's the Denver Broncos attorney. He's a great attorney. And I told him, "Look, I want to change my plea." And we met in the Tenth Circuit with United States Assistant Attorney Greg Goldberg. And he said, "Pick a charge, any charge, and you're out of here." He said, "Just plead guilty to something. I don't care what it is." He said, "I'm getting a lot of heat on this case. I don't know what's going on, but it's something big, and I don't want anything to do with it." So I pled guilty to dealing firearms without a license. I didn't even know what charge it was. I just pointed to it. It's a ridiculous charge. So I managed to get out, and I made up my mind if I could ever get away from this and get away from them, and the Clintons would get out of office, and Hillary be out of Secretary of State, then I could tell this story. And so I've come forward now to do that.
What do you think, Vicki?
Wow. You know what? His story sounds an awful lot like the pieces of the story of my friend Michael Emery that's now, he's still in jail. But, you know, I don't want to go into the whole story.
Right. We've talked about it many times.
It's very similar. The elements of it are very, very similar.
Yeah, and he named some names in there, and to be fair, I have to say this. We have no way of verifying what he says. His claims are his own, and I'll just leave it at that. But it does sound credible to me, and in light of the fact that I just found out yesterday, Hagman Report puts this on the website. I guess this guy was on 2 days ago. That interview was from 2 days ago. Yesterday, they put this out. Whistleblower Robert Cody Snodgrass reportedly in serious car accident following live appearance.
Oh, God.
They said just hours after appearing live on the Hagman Report, the interview you just heard, folks, We are receiving reports that former CIA asset and whistleblower Robert Cody Snodgrass was involved in a serious car accident. The Hagman Report team is attempting to secure the facts and additional information about this incident, and we'll have more information when it becomes available. I did get an email from another person who stated that they tried to call him, and he did answer the phone, but he sounded very weak. So I'm thinking this is real. It certainly sounds real. The guy doesn't sound like he's trying to sensationalize anything.
I believe him. I believed what he was saying, and especially because of the parallels between his experience and my friend's experience. And my friend never went public, but, you know, I just over the course of knowing him, you know, I've learned bits and pieces of his story. So, yeah, I believe it.
Yeah, we kind of have a theme, as a lot of these programs seem to take a life of their own. And today, I guess the theme would be the government mafia and the fact that we have human rights abuses here in our own country, even as the government, point the finger everywhere else around the world, like we're above that, so above and high and mighty. And here we have situations apparently like this one. We know that other situations like Michael Emery and things like that, I mean, this is rot with abuse. So we can talk about Vladimir Putin, starving people to death and his bunch of thugs beating people in prison to death and that sort of thing. But yet we've got the same kinds of crimes going on right here in the good old U.S. of A.
The guy Trenadu, who was beaten to death in prison as a case of mistaken identity for being involved in the Oklahoma City bombing. So the same thing happens here. A congressman from Idaho was charged with tax evasion or something, and they dieseled him all around the country. Kept him in a truck. I mean, yeah, so these very same things happen in this country.
The interesting thing about this whole, you know, what was the whole Murrah Federal Building, Oklahoma City bombing thing about? Why would the federal government bomb its own building? Well, let's look at what they were using that whole incident for. They wanted to pin the blame on the militia groups and use that as a means to start rounding people up, in my opinion, and certainly rounding up the guns.
Well, it's a little bigger than that. The Murrah Building was the terrorist event that was used as the justification for building the whole police security, national security state. It was the trigger event that kicked off the whole militarization of our police, merging police and FBI and military, and building these police state systems all behind the curtain of national security.
Mm-hmm.
So the militia groups, I think, were probably created by the FBI for that purpose, so that they could point to them and say, terrorists, you know.
Well, I don't think they were created. I think some of them perhaps.
Well, it's easy. Yeah, there are some people that want to belong to militia groups, but the ones, you know, the skinheads, the Nazi groups and all of that stuff, I do believe that the FBI creates those groups.
Well, I'll tell you, I don't have any doubt whatsoever that the FBI and the intelligentsia are infiltrating these groups, you bet. As far as creating them, maybe some of them. I think a lot of them are created by individuals who are just concerned about our country and want to provide a defense for it outside the normal controls of those that are actually committing the crimes.
Well, those are not the groups that I'm talking about. You're talking about Oath Keepers. I'm talking
about a lot of them. not just oath keepers.
What makes me think that is because an informant that was used by the FBI in Michael Emery's case, he was a professional informant. He'd worked for the FBI for like 20 years, and he had been a skinhead Nazi group organizer. I've got a picture of him, you know, giving the Nazi salute with all the people around him. But he was also working with the Jewish Defense League, the JDL. The mm-hmm. JDL and the FBI, both. Okay, so he was a total operation unto himself. You know, but he worked for the FBI, and that's what he did. He set people up.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, and that's the big problem is there's a lot of people, you know, a lot of these groups, you know, I don't think there's a one of them that's not infiltrated and maybe even taken over. And that seems to be the case all the time. Anytime you try to do anything to be effective, the other side is going to have their controlled opposition in there, and they will try to start stuff to try to be able to go after people, try to provoke people. I think they did that in Malheur, didn't they?
Yes, they did. There were more informants there than there were patriots. So, and it was the informants who were doing the things that was used. That they tried to use as evidence against, you know, the patriots. So, but it didn't work out. I mean, they were not believable to a jury. So,
do you want to talk about the Chris Farrell thing in the waning moments of the broadcast?
Chris Farrell.
Yeah, the Judicial Watch thing you sent me last night.
Oh, I don't think there's time enough because that was quite a long clip. So we should save that for next week.
Okay.
That has to do with, help me out here, Darren.
It has to do with the Clintons.
And Uranium One.
Yeah, yeah. Uranium One. Right. You got it.
Yeah, it looks like the government, the Justice Department is going to take another look at Uranium One.
Yeah.
Which I thought was good news and...
And I thought, here we go again.
Yeah, well, yeah, I know. When you have corruption at all levels of your Justice Department, you know, them taking another look at criminal activity is kind of like asking the fox to guard the hen house.
Exactly. Well, the words of Donald Trump right after he got elected, during the debate, of course, he said, if I were president, I would lock you up, talking to Hillary. And then as soon as he was elected, President-elect Trump went on the national news program and said, oh, I don't want to hurt them. They're good people.
Right.
So is really anything going to come out of this?
And then he brings into his administration just adding to the swamp. So there you go.
There you go indeed. Well, and then we have the Daily Bell. Drain the swamp or spread the swamp. Lawmakers pitch relocating agency headquarters. This is kind of interesting. They say
I think is a good idea. I do think that.
I don't know if it's a good idea. I don't know about that because keep in mind, this sounds an awful lot like Nixon's 10 federal regions to me. Remember how Nixon divided the country into the 10 federal regions, and that was really, I think, the first regionalism that we saw?
Well, our entire country has been divided up into regions and zones,
mm-hmm.
and our elected representative government has basically been disempowered.
Yeah, well,
regionalism.
They say here, the United States government plans to spew occupying forces far and wide within the United States, or the U.S. government will distribute the income of the bureaucratic class across distressed regions of the country. Are they spreading the wealth or spreading the swamp? The government's definition of decentralization, or decentralizing, is certainly not the same as ours. They think moving government agencies central offices out of D.C. is decentralizing the government. It's like an Amelia Bedelia book, well, the people said they want a decentralized government. But generally, when people advocate decentralizing government, they mean the power structure, not the physical presence of government agents. But still, it is not so clear whether moving agencies out of D.C. would be a good thing or a bad thing. Well, on some levels, you could say, and this is me talking now, I'm not reading anymore, that it wouldn't really matter. But as with Nixon's 10 federal regions, and I come back to that, he claimed, I think that was a decentralization move too, supposedly. But what he actually did was bring the federal government right up into your backyard. So what do you think?
We've already got them in our backyard. The issue would be, who is going to be doing the hiring?
Mm-hmm.
If they continue to hire out of Washington, D.C., or if they continue to import foreigners to work inside our government because there are no Americans who will take the job, then it won't make any difference at all.
Yeah. And that's really where we are today.
It will just bring the influence of federal money closer to home is all.
Exactly. Well, we're just about out of time, Vicki. Hard to believe how fast 3 hours can go. We hope you folks will have a good Thanksgiving, despite everything that's going on. And, you know, try to spend a little time with your families, those of you who have them nearby. And you just about have to keep a sense of humor and keep your chin up and keep a good spirit about this stuff, because otherwise it can drive you crazy. If you look at it from the standpoint of everything going wrong. They said, we didn't get to this problem overnight, that's for sure. And
that's true.
We just have to look at it that way.
And cure it overnight either. So.
Well, the nice thing about it today, and the thing that gives me some hope, is that we have a lot of people now that are paying attention and that are talking about the problems and exposing the mess. And with the country paying attention, that's a good thing. Anyway.
Yes.
We got to go. We're out of time. Pray for this republic. Do what you can to restore it. God bless each and every one of you folks, and we hope you have a good Christmas, and join us back here next week. We will be here, Lord willing, and the technology willing. God bless you folks, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks, Vicki.
Thank you. Merry Christmas, everybody.
Bye-bye.